like how outgoing to interact. I think the system arrangement in this is not very conducive. If we maybe can try that to solve, members maybe should be this on that side, and then the department for interaction actually, it will assist them. Monitoring and evaluation mechanisms to ensure that we give expression to the aspirations of all learners, educators, and many stakeholders, including yourself as the department and Umalusi. So we would like to express our sincere gratitude for the steady manner in which the Umalusi collectively executed the statutory obligations over the last, and in particular the granting, integrity, certification, and validation to our annual metric and related examination. So we are all welcomed. Similarly to the Department of Education, we appreciate your role as that of the custodian of education in our country and your continued critical role in relation to preparing our children for a better life. And also I would like to take this opportunity to welcome you, our acting DG, Mr. Bobby Sobria. I'll get used to that. And we also wish to wish everybody in their respective endeavors that we are aware that Dr. Hindle, you have been the one who has been appearing, you know, assisting us in education. Now we think that we are going to get that working relation also from the acting DG. On that note, I'm going to propose that we start with the presentation of the department, that is the Department of Education, and after that we'll have interaction, and after that we'll allow Umalusi to make a presentation, because the DG, acting DG, has requested to be released at 11:15, so I think as the leader of the delegation, we are just going to give the Department of Education all set to do their presentation. Over to the department.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, Ms. Wendy Makgathe. I hope I got the pronunciation correct. I must say, Honorable Chair, you've done very well with pronunciation of my surname. Honorable Chairperson, thank you very much for allowing me to leave at 11:15, just to confirm for other members of this select committee, I chair the DG's cluster on human development, and I have to leave to chair that cluster, which has been scheduled by the presidency. Honorable Chairperson, we regard this as an important event on our calendar. It's an opportunity for us to ensure that we support Parliament in exercising its accountability over us. And to the extent that we can provide information for you to do your work, we will do so. We have prepared in accordance with the letter we received, and we've been asked to speak on the examinations, 2009 National Senior Certificate Examinations, which should form the thrust of our presentation. Obviously, those examinations have a supplementary dimension to it, which is written currently. As we speak, we'll speak about that as well. But more importantly, we want to reflect on what those results mean and what we as a department seek to do in addressing those results. The presentation will start off by Mr. Sishi on my right here, who heads examinations in the country, to make a broad presentation on the results itself, the trends, what they mean by subject, what they mean by province, some of our analysis, and then I'll take over thereafter to speak about how we interpret those results for the sector and what we intend to do to respond to the challenges that these results present for us. So with your permission, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, I want to hand over to Mr. Sishi to do his presentation. Uh, Thank you very much, Chairperson. I must as part of my point of departure, indicate how honored we are always. We are given the opportunity to make a presentation in this community. And all the time, the comments that you receive always find themselves into our own structures for deliberation and implementation. And we would like to thank you very much for this. This presentation is done on the 24th of February, almost a month after schools have resumed. That's this on the 7th of January. And since then, the department has done a lot, and that's why our presentation is not merely to present statistical evidence of the performance of the class of 2009, but more so to try and indicate how this department tries to deal with what lessons we have learned from that experience. That is why it's titled Towards a Sector Plan for Basic Education, of which the Director General is going to speak much more in detail about. I need to indicate, Chair and Honorable Members, that examinations in South Africa are in good hands. They are in good hands in the sense that not only is the department running the examinations and then declaring on its credibility, but we have external organs like Umalusi that declare on its credibility. It's not just that they declare on the credibility of the results, but also on the credibility of the processes that produce those results, from the setting of question papers to internal assessment and external assessment. So we feel very confident each time we release these results, but we would like to argue that there is much more to the results, and if we were to really look carefully at the statistics, what they say to us, there's much more we can do to fix the problems we see in our education. The slide reflected there just tries to paint the picture of the class of 2009 and the kind of the age group, generally grade 12 is done by young people between the ages of 17 to 18. That's the bulk of the grade 12 learners. And I think it's about time that when we look at grade 10, 11, and 12 in the system, we understand the profile of these learners. These are adolescent, young people who are not yet adults, but no longer children, and therefore require very innovative ways of dealing with their growth and development, particularly the extent to which we deal with values that will ensure that they don't just pass matric and be experts in subject areas, but they are holistically imbued with the attitudes and values that are entrenched in the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa. We indicated when we released the results that we were quite happy that at the time the results were standardized, brought to scrutiny by not only Umalusi, but also invited guests, because each time we do this, there are also external players who come to observe within the SADC region and also internationally. That for the first time in 2 years, more than 75% of all the results we presented to Umalusi were raw scores, which means they were results that were not tempered with, which were the results that were directly a reflection of the scores of young people. And I thought that that was important. Quite clearly, in the first 2 years of the implementation of the NSC, the National Senior Certificate, there are two debates that have emerged about matric results, which probably at the introduction of our presentation we must speak about. One of them is that in 2008 you said maths was easy. Everyone was saying mathematics was too easy. In 2009, then everyone said maths was too difficult. But what is important to us is that we are consistent in terms of a standard, and that the public understand that in examinations, we are in exams a tool for the public in South Africa to measure the extent to which education prepares learners. And these are two separate and very important tasks. Exam credibility is about the standards, is about the accuracy of the tool and how it is implemented. On the one hand, the education department that administers the exams has another responsibility of preparing learners for those examinations. And I believe that we do try to handle these delicate tasks that can actually be seen in contradiction to each other at some point. But with Umalus being there and other important role players, we do well in this regard. Magnitude and size of our exams is huge. We have an exam in South Africa, as much as the public is interested in the matric, but we have 13 examinations that we run in this country every year. And they include exams for colleges of education, examinations for adult education, and examinations for matric, which has become a focus of most of the public debate. But we would like at some point in the future that the similar scrutiny is also focused on the others, because this helps the system to grow. Chairperson, we have 7,000 marking centers throughout the length and breadth of the country. And when we issue admission letters to all the young people who write, and in last year we had 610,000 that wrote, we promise the public that when we say maths will be written on the 9th of December, it gets written on the 9th of December, at exactly the time we have indicated almost 18 months prior to this promise being made through the admission letters that we have. We are proud that we are consistent in making this happen, and last year indeed, despite the fact that there were irregularities reported in a number of exam centers, but generally this promise was kept. And marking centers, 114 of them, with about 35,000 teachers throughout the country, appointed to mark on the basis of their expertise in the subject. 828 chief markers appointed to moderate the marks. National examiners appointed by both the National Department and Umalus to internally and externally moderate the results. All of this, and I'm not going to go through the whole slide, but this is just to help to provide a picture of the magnitude and size of the system that we are running. The Minister of Education, at the occasion of the release of the results on the 7th, her opening remarks were that as the Department of Education, we are disappointed that in 2009 we report that almost 40% of all the 610,000 young people who wrote failed. I think it is important that this is foregrounded. It is made upfront, so that at a time when in my presentation I indicate what I consider to be gains in the system, it does not sound like we are a system that is celebrating a victory that is hollow, that is not seen in the context of, as a system, we are given 12 years to look after young people. So after 12 years, if we report that 40% of them have failed, definitely that indicates that there is a problem, and therefore the approach today, being that the Director General focused more on what is it that we are going to be doing in this regard. This slide now reflected, it provides the whole result, and I think probably I may even conclude my presentation based on this slide, because I think it tells the whole story of how many roads. It does a comparison of both the 2008 and 2009. It says the first national senior certificate exam was written by 533,000 young people, and we had more than 30,000 more that wrote in 2009, especially if we add the 38,000 that wrote as part-time candidates in the examination. We are disappointed indeed that of the 552,000, only 334,000 passed the 2009 examination. The slides indicate also as well the kind of quality of the result, in the sense that it begins to also just unpack the 334,000.
so that we can see how many of the 334,000 passed with qualification for bachelor's, for admission for bachelor's in higher education, and how many qualified for diploma for admission to higher education as well. 131,000 for diplomas and 109,000 for the bachelors. What these figures mean? Because if you look at the results in terms of figures, they tell a story that more learners got to pass in 2009. Also, they say more learners than 2008 got to pass in terms of the bachelor admission. But when you turn this statistics around and you look at them in percentage, they tell another story that says that actually the results went down in 2009. And I think it's important to say that, because we may say more numbers passed, but if the percentage is lower, that means many more also failed. And I think that is the honesty that the department has undertook to present its results this year, with the hope that our stakeholders will not just look at us and say, fix it, but they will come on board into the proposals that we make and assist us to deal with the challenges that we are faced in an education system that has an inherited legacy that goes down many years, and we know the history of this country. The per province, it is important for us to also indicate that two of the rural provinces, KwaZulu-Natal and the Eastern Cape, which are the provinces that are very much challenged in terms of the infrastructure and also the numbers. If you just look at Limpopo, KwaZulu-Natal, Gauteng, those three, four provinces constitute more than 60% of all metric in the country. And therefore, if in those two, four provinces, there is a problem in education, it will always be reflected in the whole national average pass that is there. And I think we are happy to see that despite that, in all the provinces, in fact in the seven of the provinces, there was a decline in the pass numbers and the results. But in KwaZulu-Natal we had up to 3% increase. And although there was Eastern Cape did not improve significantly the results, but it did not go down as the trend suggested in the other provinces. We have to analyze this to actually try to understand what it means, so that we do not rush to saying this means positive, when probably at close analysis this is. And the DG is going to speak to this as well. The current slide tries to project the quality of our results over a period 1999 to 2009, just to show what is the output of our national education system into higher education, because these are numbers who qualified for bachelor's since 1999. In terms of numbers, if you look from 1999, when 63,700 passed for endorsement, and you see that in 2009, we have 109 that passed for endorsement. This could be interpreted to be indicating a positive upswing in the results. But it's also important to take note of my initial comments about the percentage of this very same number, so that we recognize that as much as the trend is upward, but we have many, many young people who do not manage to qualify in this. And even those who qualify, don't qualify in the subject areas that are going to add value into the economic development in the country. Lastly, Madam Chair, I want to also indicate that it is important to note that these exams are based on a new curriculum. This new curriculum implemented only in 2008. In 2009, it was only the second year of implementation. This means a lot in terms of the level of challenge, the academic demand of our examinations compared to examinations that were conducted in the past. For the first time in the history of education in this country, South Africa is probably the only country in Africa where every learner who exits grade 12 would have done some form of mathematics in their curriculum. In that mathematics or math literacy are compulsory subjects for all learners that go through our system. Unlike in the past, where less than 5,000 young people would have done mathematics, in this regard, all the 610,000 candidates that wrote our matric would have done either mathematics or mathematical literacy. In a system that is still challenged in terms of the quality of teachers in mathematics, you are going to see this being reflected in the results in that regard. Madam Chair, I will move from provincial results because we have provided a document that is comprehensive to the members that indicates the detail in terms of all of the results. So we are not going to speak to the finer details, the province, the subject. But there are observations that we have made in the analysis that we would like to share with honorable members. One of them is that we do recognize that in schools that are located in quintile 1, which are schools that are generally challenged in terms of their infrastructure, we have schools that still, despite the fact that they are located in that quintile, have pleased us in terms of their performance. We have more than 196 of those schools in the country that performed above 80%, but they are located within this quintile. There probably are good lessons we can learn from teachers and principals that run the schools in such areas, but still manage to give us the good results that we see. And as much as we are focused in trying to move those who are at the other categories in the slide, we have to recognize the good performance of those schools that are indicated. Equally, Madam Chair, we are disappointed that we do have quintile 5 schools, which are supposed to be schools with a better infrastructure, good teachers, qualified teachers, in affluent areas, access to water, access to telephone and electricity. But you have schools that perform below 50%, even below 20%. It is important for us, and in our strategy for remediation for this, we are attacking and we are actually focused in those schools and ensuring that we understand in a quick assessment process, quick and rapid assessment, a strategy that we have adopted to scrutinize the reasons for this and provide relevant interventions in this regard. I would hand over, Chairperson, the rest of the presentation to the Director General so that he adds the new angle into the results, an angle of an analysis to these results. I need to then indicate that in the subject results, what really, really have challenged us are the results of physical science and the results of mathematics. We are really looking carefully at this. There could be many reasons for such a huge drop in the results in those two subjects. And those reasons could be about the quality of the teachers in the system, the quality of support or the lack of support to those teachers. It could be about the curriculum itself, whether or not it is not pitched at a standard that is higher than a standard of an exit level system, equivalent to a matric anywhere in the country. We can't run a physical science exam that is at a level of a university degree and call that a fair examination. We have to uphold the standards, but ensure that we continue our processes of benchmarking internationally so that our examinations are pitched exactly at the same level as equivalent examinations in the rest of the world. And in that, we are very proud that we have already since 2007, when we implemented the National Senior Certificate, started to engage with international examination bodies to fix this. The DG will announce some of the measures in terms of how we specifically are going to deal with physical science and mathematics. But we take their responsibility for ensuring that we train the teachers that teach these subjects. We support them through our support system. Thank you, Chair, for the opportunity. and the Director General will then proceed with the presentation.
Thank you very much, Mr. Tshishi, through you, Honorable Chairperson. If one looks at the results, we need to understand what the dynamics in the system are to be able to look at what needs to be done and what sense we make of these results. And there are two broad things that occurs to us. The one is that irrespective of what the pass rate is or what the failure rate is, what underlies this whole thing is that it reflects the huge inequality in the education system, as Mr. Tshishi has indicated. Those quintile one schools that have performed better are schools not only in richer areas, but the schools that are generally ex-House of Assembly, ex-House of Delegate schools, and therefore one sees inequality playing itself out in terms of race, in terms of where the schools are located, and most importantly, in terms of poverty. And we know, Honorable Chair, based on your introductory remarks, if basic education is going to serve the social goals of the country, including the economic goals, it needs to address these issues of inequality. And if we are to play our role, we need to roll back the inequality of education outcomes. So if one looks at the results, you've got to assess how does inequality manifest itself in the results? And they do, if you look at these results. If you go to the provincial results, you will see, even though it has been a aggregate drop in the national pass rate, if you go province by province, with the exception of KZN, with the exception of Eastern Cape, which stabilized, and Northwest, which had a small, very small drop, the rest of the provinces had fairly significant drops. And some of those drops are represented by schools that cater for poor learners. So that's the reality we've got to address. The other thing that's emerging for us here is that we're sitting with a maturing system, and that's good news. Maturing system to the extent that it's predictable. From an administrative point of view, it's working very well. From an oversight and quality assurance point of view, we have regular interactions with Umalusi on an ongoing basis, but during the exam, we engage with them around standardization in particular. And if you look at the extent of convergence between their approach, their thinking, and ours, it reflects a maturing system. Not that we agree with each other, we shouldn't, because quality assurance is there to ensure that our quality is upheld. But the maturity of the system is confirmed by the fact that we have a convergence of approach, and we uphold completely Umalusi's independence. They exercise that independence very strongly, and they're here today, and they'll speak to that themselves. But the other thing that's emerged for us around the system itself is that we've had, if you look at the numbers Mr. Tshishi put up, a trend of a rapidly growing system. Now, anywhere in the world, if you have such a trend, especially in a developing country, rapid growth of learners does create challenges for a system. It creates challenges around supplying teachers, administrative challenges, and so forth. And we have to be aware of that. Under the circumstances, I think we're doing very well, but certainly given the rapid change, we need to ensure that we work extremely hard to accommodate those changes. Also, Mr. Tshishi has pointed out that what these results raise for us, not only in terms of the pass rate, but in terms of the careful analysis that especially Umalusi has done, it's pointed to areas of curriculum challenges that we need to address. It's pointed to areas of teacher development, and especially around teacher supply. How do we deploy teachers? How do we deploy math and science teachers that are adequately qualified, again, to address those areas where poor learners attend? But, Honorable Chairperson, the bigger and more important point perhaps to make is that one can't look at a matric pass rate and then decide on the health of the system, because by the time learners get to grade 12, it's quite late. If you want to fix these problems, you've got to fix it up quite early. Indeed, you've got to fix it up at ECD level, and for the Department of Basic Education, that means grade R. So our response to these results are at one level, in the short term, to look at what we do in grades 10, 11, and 12. But in the long term, medium term, as well as immediate interventions, is to look at how the entire system, starting from grade R, is addressed in a sustainable way, so that when learners get to the senior phase, get to the further education and training phase, which is grade 10, 11, and 12, they have acquired sufficient learning and sufficient competence to be able to sit successfully for an exam in grade 12. So that's the point of departure that we have adopted. And to that extent, Honorable Chairperson, the Minister has acknowledged that we have huge challenges in the education system. She's done that on the basis that unless we honestly and accurately diagnose the problems, we are not going to solve the problem. Essentially, she's saying that in terms of our primary objective, where schools have to create conditions for learners to succeed, that's where the challenges lie. And the solution she's proposed, and the government, the executive has proposed, flows from that onward chapter. The agreement is that there are many things that cause the problems that we're talking about, or the challenges. It's the socio-cultural environment within and outside schools, even though we as a department don't have an impact on conditions outside school. As a government, it's important to understand that those conditions play a significant role when learners enter the schoolyard. We need to ensure that we have an enabling policy coupled with a bureaucracy that's capable to support schools. And that, you will see, is the essence of the strategy the Minister is putting forward, Honourable Chair, which will be revealed in the coming weeks and finally revealed in her budget speech, which is scheduled for the 21st of March. We also need to ensure that there's school management and governance that's appropriate, that teacher capability and commitment is commensurate with what's needed, that parents are involved in the learners' homework, but also in the school's affairs, that physical infrastructure and inputs are adequate, that learning support materials and so forth are what's required in the schooling system. So we are aware that all of these things, not as single factors, but in combination, is what shapes the outcome of success or not. Now, Honourable Chairperson, the Honourable Members here would have heard from the President's State of the Nation address the approach that government is adopting, the executive is adopting to addressing these big challenges in government. You're aware that the President has identified as the number one priority of priorities basic education. So government is working on a short list of priorities that we'll focus on in the current term of government, this five-year period. But within those priorities, the number one is basic education. And you have heard Honourable Chairperson, the President, speak in very emphatic terms of what needs to be done with regard to basic education. He's identified certain key outcomes. He's spoken about teachers being in class on time. He's spoken about ways in which we will ensure quality improves. And in essence, he spoke about learner assessments in grade 3, 6, and 9. He's spoken about visiting schools. And he's given those marching orders to our minister as something that needs to be focused on to ensure that we turn around the system. Honourable Chairperson, our Minister has taken that on board, and already she has formulated for the President a set of interventions. As I said, these, in their final formulation, will be presented to the legislature when she makes a budget speech in the National Assembly and then in the NCOP thereafter. But essentially, to give you a sense of the intervention she's speaking about already at this stage, she's saying consistent with the presidency's approach, we need to ensure in basic education, given its importance, given it's the number one priority, and given that it accounts for the largest share of government expenditure by a long measure, that we have outcomes-focused planning to ensure that whatever we do is focused on improving the quality of education, but also that we promote accountability. So essentially, when we talk about grade 3, 6, and 9 assessments, when we talk about the National Education Evaluation and Development Unit, when the President spoke about visiting schools, the Minister's interpretation of this is that it's all intended to ensure that we create a culture of support, of assessment, and of accountability in the system. There's a lot of excitement around this thing, and there's a tendency for people to overstate the extremes of this approach. It doesn't help anyone to talk purely about assessment without support. It doesn't help anyone to talk only about supporting teachers, principals, districts without assessment. It doesn't help anyone to not include in that discussion accountability. So the emphasis, Honourable Chairperson, that our Minister places on this is to say that all of these things are not only singularly important, but they're important in their integration. And therefore, it's about creating a system through which we can assess, everything, schools, principals, officials, teachers. We can support them where needs are identified, but we can hold the entire system accountable. To give effect to this, Honorable Chair, the Minister has advanced that she will develop what's called a Basic Education Action Plan. This action plan is quite different, Honorable Chairperson, from what's been done before. Because in the past, the Department of Basic Education developed its strategic plan in accordance with the PFMA. Provinces developed their strategic plans in accordance with the PFMA. There was no requirement or no scrutiny to ensure that it's completely integrated. Now, the Minister has taken it upon herself, under direction of the President, to develop a plan for the sector, an integrated plan. So that will be the plan for the entire basic education sector. The President announced in his State of the Nation address that he will have performance agreements with the ministers. That's a new thing in government. It hasn't happened before. There was always performance agreements between a minister and a DG, and that was for the department only. In this instance, the President announced he'll have a performance agreement with our minister for the whole of basic education. And her way of responding to that immediately is to say that performance agreement needs to be based on a plan. And that plan will be the action plan she's talking about, through which she'll include provinces and her MECs, and through which everyone will find their accountability, not only in government, but through the inclusion of NGOs as well. Furthermore, she's saying we need to do certain specific things. One is we need to ensure that there's a basic functionality at all schools, because if you don't have that, honorable members, no matter what you put into a school, that school is unable to absorb it. You need to ensure that the principal is functioning, that different structures are there, teachers are going to classrooms, so that when you put in a resource, like a good textbook or a good workbook, that school is able to absorb it quickly. We also need to acknowledge that teachers are central to the strategy, this turnaround strategy. And therefore, we need to ensure that teacher capability is addressed. To that extent, the ministers announced the development of a teacher development institute. We need to ensure that teachers are supported based on evidence, that's assessments that are done, credible assessments. And we need to ensure that everyone is held accountable, teachers, principals, officials, and everyone. We also, under direction of the minister, honorable members would be aware, have been working hard on streamlining the curriculum, ensuring that it is streamlined to the point where its implementation would be smooth, and already significant changes have taken place. These changes arise from lessons learned during the process of implementation in the actual classroom situation. And therefore, the revisions would obviously address those conditions that have militated against successful implementation. So it's simply streamlining the curriculum, and we're quite confident that will improve implementation. In support of teachers, already the minister has announced that we're developing workbooks, lesson plans, to give teachers very clear guidelines of what the content knowledge is required, how they should face the curriculum, and how they should teach it. Already, Honorable Chairperson, we've been working on creating capability in the national department, and provinces have been asked to do the same. The new organogram for the national department reflects a new kind of thinking that the President called for and the minister is responding to. If you look at our organogram, you will see that every structure she's asked for is intended to support and work through provinces much more strongly than we have. Education is a concurrent function. Basic education continues to be so. But we can't say that as a national department we don't play a role. Provinces can't say that NESTO doesn't play a role. We need to give effect to the spirit of concurrence, and we believe we need to do that through supporting provinces much more better than we've done before, and to that extent the restructuring has taken place. We will focus on improving learner retention by assessing what's causing it. We've done numerous studies already, and the details, as I said, will come out in our strategic plan and the sector plan. The focus on grade R at ECD was identified in the President's State of the Nation address. We're working very strongly on that. We've made major gains in the rollout of grade R in terms of quantitative enrollment. Now our emphasis is on quality. And quality essentially is by addressing teachers who teach grade R, the quality of the class environment, and the quality of the inputs that are put into those class environments. Also, Honorable Chairperson, we need to ensure that if we do what I said is required when I started my part of the presentation, if we are to address inequality, then we've got to ensure that the resourcing of schools, especially poor schools, reaches that level of adequacy. And again, here, we're aware that our no-fee school policy is working well based on a very detailed evaluation. But we also know that adequacy is not where it should be in many schools, and that needs to be addressed. And therefore, our resourcing plan is very much part of the sector plan, including an infrastructure plan. I will conclude there, Honorable Chairperson, by saying that the approach of the executive, as reflected in the President's State of the Nation address, which flows from the Cabinet Lekgotla of January, has got some significant changes in it, in the way we are expected to operate. We've heard the President, our Minister has carefully assessed what the President has said with us. We have responded to what the President has called for. I've presented just a small hint of what the Minister intends to do. We are required to present our strategic plan to the legislature on the 2nd of March. We will do so. And these plans are elaborated further in that. In addition, I've indicated that the Minister is working on the development of a basic education action plan, which covers the whole basic education sector. That will be presented in a budget speech to the National Assembly and to the NCOP. I will stop at that point, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you, 18 I'm just going to open this because, as you have requested, we are supposed to release you. But I'm just going to give members to interact with your presentation. Maybe if they've got questions to raise. Members, it's now your opportunity. I'll start with Honorable Fiber, followed by Honorable Nube, Honorable Matamaite, Honorable Gunda, and Honorable Blackie, in that sequence. Honorable, was the hand up?
No,
there's a call on the door.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, yes. I would like to first start by saying that I really believe that the quantile system must really be re-evaluated. You know, and it should not be in areas, but they should rather look at the income groups of parents. As we did pick up that some of these schools, they are really of the poorest people, staying very close on the borders. Of the quantile 4 or 5 schools, and they actually go to these schools, and it's difficult for them because the schools don't get that money to help these kids. And I think, I just believe that's the first thing I think must be re-evaluated, the quantile system. I don't think that is properly done at this stage. And then, Madam Chair, as education is very close to my heart and my province, the Northern Cape, as you know, had the worst matric results in a long time. So, as President Zuma clearly stated in the State of the Nation address, you know, they, without doubt that education is the main priority for government in 2010. And as you know, we as select committee don't have hundreds of eyes. So when we are in our constituencies, that we do go to these schools. And I first looked when the President was in Kimberley, the best school in our province was the Diamantfeld High School, with 100% matriculate pass rate. I went to find out what was the success, because if there are successes, we now need to pass it on to the others. And one of these was that the headmaster said that, you know, where there are not successes, people can't read. And that's the problem. Scholars don't know how to read. And that he picked up was one of the big things. Then I went to the second school, which was at Plaatfontein, the Kung and the Kwe, Bushman people. Now, very funny that there were 9 matrics, and all 9 of them successfully passed the matric. Now,
I just want to quick, I know we don't have a lot of time, but there's, just to give you guys background, the Kumi and the Kwe are two cultural groups. And they don't understand Afrikaans at all. They only try Afrikaans in school because they come out of the Angolan War from that time. So for that reason, they are forced to take part in Afrikaans because Kumi and Kwe is not written in any language yet. It's not written. So these kids are already so far behind, starting from grade one. They don't know a language and they must learn in this language. So they must learn a language and start to learn. So things like this, I think we must really look at. Those nine matriculants that went through, the government should at some stage try and help those matriculants to plow back into that community and maybe perhaps help these children because they are Afrikaans, they can speak Afrikaans, but they will also, you don't need translators, they will be able to help these 700 other kids to also get through so that they don't have this massive disadvantage, as school is already difficult as it is. And then, unfortunately, Madam Chair, I went to the Wankhalashewe High School, which is also one of the worst pass rates in our province in Kimberley. And I, as a National Council of Province member, it was discussed that the Emang Moho Secondary High School, that this Mr. Brooker, the headmaster, as my secretary organized a meeting a week before that, the circuit manager, Mr. Mopareng, because I was a DA member, said, sorry, I will not go into that school. And then, apparently, Palesa Tulo gave the instructions not to allow any DA members, and I just felt that I am a select committee member of parliament, and I should be able to go and investigate in any school. It just seemed to me that they don't want you in the school. And I feel that is totally not right. And I actually picked up a letter from SATU that said that no DA members would be allowed and that police must actually remove them. And that to me was very wrong, as I believe all parties in South Africa, as the President says, this is main priority, not just for the governing party, but for the Democratic Alliance and any other party, to see where we can actually help children pass. So I would really like you guys to take this up. This is not for a party, but for our children. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Father. But I'm going to request, you know, please with members that we are looking into the issue of time. If members can try to go straight to the point so that we can use this opportunity that the acting DG is still here. The next member.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Chair, I just want to find out, I couldn't see it or heard about it. What are the mechanisms that the Department of Education are putting in place? I know it may be difficult, are putting in place to avoid what has happened in Mpumalanga. In previous years, it should be Mpumalanga, it should be Gauteng, some part of leaks of the examination paper. The other one is I know it might be an issue of, but it's policy, yeah. The issue of the renewal of the quintile. Somewhere in your documents, it talks about the renewal of the quintiles. Because you had, there are some challenges in terms of ranking schools according to that. For instance, in Alexander, it's next to Sandton. You find schools in Alexander ranked quintile 5 and quintile 4. And those are coming from very challenged infrastructure, poor communities. In Protea, the school may have been Proti, but there are informal settlements there where Proti absorbs those learners. At Olorado Park, I was there in January. They were telling me that their schools are ranked quintile 5 and 4. And they were saying close to 70% of the community at Olorado Park are not working. So how you then are analyzing the results in terms of saying schools that are in quintile 5 are not necessarily producing what is expected of them might be based on what is not really what is happening on the ground. The president talked about the 10-point plan. I'm not sure whether it's here. Where is it? You hear from the portfolio that they know about the 10-point plan. I'm not sure whether in this document it is there. I just see 1 up to 10 from the Making Schools Work, but it's called 94-2004. And let me talk about the 10-point plan. To say maybe before you came to a 10-point plan, you had those non-negotiables. But also the whole question of buying in and ensuring that all stakeholders are doing what is there, because I know everybody signed for the non-negotiables. I'm not sure of the 10-point plan in terms of ensuring that everybody buys into that and committed towards implementing it. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Maybe if I come up with my questions, the way we don't have sufficient time to can interact with the department, we are not going to do justice on the presentation itself. Let me go to my questions, Honorable Chair. When the department presents under what are the causes of problems, during the school reopening this year, when we visited schools, we pick up very serious problems affecting the teaching and learning at schools. Number one, the issue of teachers who are traveling more than 80 kilometers to the school every day, and they don't arrive on time at school. At some point, maybe during the rainy days, the bridges are broken, they cannot reach the school. Or the transport got breakdown, they cannot reach the school on time. What is the department, you know, or what can the department do to can, you know, address that problem, because it's a problem for teachers arriving late or learners not having, you know, transport to school, because there are schools in the rural areas who they don't have transport for learners to the school. My other question, Honorable Chair, is in relation with the, when the curriculum is introduced, like the NSC, are teachers really trained, well trained on that new curriculum? Because I visited about 7 schools in my area. What I discovered is that teachers were not well trained, and they will be trained after school. After school, they have to travel from different school to one point where they will be getting that training, and that training will only last for an hour or so. Microwave them. You don't, you know, really ensure the training that you give them, it will make them to be able to, you know, conduct their teaching. My last question, Honorable Chair. In relation to the department ensuring
and adequate resourcing of schools. Already, we are in the second month of the year, and there is no time frame as to when the department will develop a comprehensive infrastructure development action plan. Because as we are speaking now, teaching must continue. And when is this plan to come into place? Thanks, Honorable Chair.
Honorable Chair, I'm partly covered by the previously members that have spoken, but my main concern I would like to ask the department is this. And it's it might sound like a stupid question, it's a very serious question. How serious is the department about the future of our children? Does the department have a workable, simple plan that can educate and assist our children? Thirdly, in the Northern Cape, there's a place called Mier. The school se naam is gecombineerde school Mier. I asked that question last year in the house to the very same department. Up until now, there's nothing has been done. Those children last year couldn't attend any inter-school sports because there was no funds. There are 319 kilos from Uppington, and it's tar road to travel to them. They've got a library. They can't use a library. They don't have someone to maintain a library. They don't have it, and it's very old books. Something else. In Uppington, there's in a black township called Pabalelo, where I grew up, there is a pre-primary school called Velalanga, a very, very old school. If you put four houses of the white people, they stand. That's how big the yard is of that school. There is no sport facilities in that school. In a one class of that school, there are 53 people. 53 people in one class. There are serious challenges, and the department come and keep on telling us, giving us these beautiful plans and strategies and all these things. I don't want to see these things on paper. I want to see it happening on the ground. And it's true. Some of our children can't read. We've made a difference. I have experienced it. You took grade 8 from a previously disadvantaged school. Let them read for you. You take the same grade 8 from a previously white school, where there is black, Indian, colored, white. Let them read for you. There's a vast difference. And they're still using the same curriculum. My child is at a previously abandoned school, a white school. She's now in grade 11. It's amazing what she can do and a grade 12 can't do in an ordinary previously disadvantaged school. And they change classes, and that's how they find out. I had six of them in my house reading for me. And they can't read. Now, the department comes here this morning again. Yes, the president has told, the basic education is there. That's all just plans on paper. Can the department give us practical proof what they are going to do? It's the only way we will solve this problem, because education is not something that we can play with. Education is a serious, serious need for our people in order. Taking for instance where we're coming from, when we grew up, when we go to school, when we went to school, and go, if you compare it with today, it amazed me that we can even read better than our own children. So where's the difference? Lack of discipline in schools and in teachers, in pupils and in teachers. And something else, the parents' involvement. I wanna the department do a study on why is some parents in the previously disadvantaged schools not interested and involved in the school's business, but when our children goes to a disadvantage to
advantage school, they are involved, 100%. That's something that we always struggle with. And the school governing bodies, the department must really see to it that the school governing bodies are doing their work as well. So from my side, Honorable Chair, to the Acting DG and Mr. Sishi, whatever they say, please take our children serious. I used to say in the Northern Cape in the legislature, when the MEC of Education...
Honorable Munda, I'm going to cut you because you have made your point, and you know, I just want us to make use of this opportunity. I think what we are going to do, because this time is very short, we will also, again, we are going to invite the department, the basic education department, raise their issues. Let me give to Honorable...
Chair, I'll try to be straight to the point. I'm not going to repeat all what my colleague has just said. But taking from a premise of what the chief director said about, our standing as examination department, he said exams in South Africa are in good hands. We all agree with that. But we want them to further convince us that the examination are in good hands. Two questions, Director. You talk about standardization and quality. So what I want to know is that how, in the layman's understanding of standard and quality, are these examination papers standardized? Because I have gone through in the streets. They were talking about this examination paper as one size fits all examination paper. So I want to check if these papers are really standardized and their outcomes are envisaged to give quality. And the other question is on, just want to check with the department, what was actually wrong with your grading system, grading papers as higher grade and standard grade? Why this sudden complete change? What was actually wrong with that grading system? And then I also want the department, I asked the minister in September last year a question. This was the minister's response. She said the National Senior Certificate does not offer subject on higher grades. However, in consultation with Uma Lucy and the examination panel, 50% in any subject in the National Senior Certificate should be equivalent of a higher grade. I'm going back to the one-size-fits-all kind of thing. If all the papers are written, and your assumption as a layman, as a parent, is that when your child scores over 50%, that subject is on higher grade. How do you grade it that way? And the last question, Director. You talked about supplying textbook and lesson plans for teachers. Do you, as you supply these textbooks and lesson plan to schools, take into account the geographical locations of schools, whether the school is in the rural area or in the farm area or in the township or in the urban area, or is just like examination papers a one size fits all? Do all this material supply to school irrespective of a geographical location? Because I've got a point to make about the learners who are in the far rural area, in the farm school, and in an urban area, about how they contextualize these materials. That is basically my question. And I will end just there.
Acting DG, let me just do this. Let me just give members one, so that you wrap up, and then we... No, I'm not going to, because of the time. I said that we are going to request the department also to come, because this thing of basic department education really is very crucial. So, yeah, if I knew that there were other commitments, we could have re-tabled this process from the department. But I'm going to allow Honorable De Villiers one question, Honorable Borotho one question, and yourself one. And then we allow the department. We'll create another time. Honorable
Dibila? Thank you, Chairperson. I've got a lot of things, but I think I will hold it over when we again meet with the basic education department. The one question I want to pose is, I never pick up on the presentation that the department make mentions about the habit of reading. So if we've got a problem, especially in the basic education, the literacy and numeracy problem, then I strongly believe that to let the learners get the habit to read, it doesn't matter if there's a library or not a library. It must only put available books at schools. So if the learners can gain that habit to read, then that is one of the solutions for our problem in our different schools and in the education department. That is the one thing I want to ask. Is there that situation put forward to education department, and how can we address that problem in our education system? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I'll try to be very brief, although I had some more questions. In the first place, I'll start with the lesson plans that are going to be given to educators. We think that is an effort, but my problem would be when teachers have to plan lessons, the context should be taken into account, which says, where are you and what do you want to achieve in your own area? That's the first one. The second one of the causes, the problems as outlined here, is parental involvement. Yes, we know that the new curriculum requires more of assistance, especially in the lower grades that they are talking about. But we are another community now. Most of the parents that are enlightened are at work. Now, what is happening? How are those that are supposed to be left with the children, like the old grannies and all that, be as of assistance to the learners, because they themselves are illiterate? That is one of the things that we should be looking into, especially in the rural areas like in Mpumalanga, where I come from. The high number of parents, they are illiterate, and they are unable to assist in this instance. How do we make sure that happens? Lastly, I'll go to teacher capability as mentioned here. You know, when you talk teacher capability, yes, we know that we have been trained as teachers. They've been trained in the old ways. Now we have the National Curriculum Statement, which comes with its own requirements. But the capability, yes, we have got what you call skills development. But I realize that the skills development is not applied accordingly, because there is this program of integrated quality management system that is used very well. I wish the department could make sure that they monitor that, because in my opinion, when you want to empower educators, is by getting the skills analysis. What do they need? Where are their weaknesses? And this process of ITMS comes in. But you will find that in a particular school, in a very rural area, all the educators, when they do the courses of skills, workplace skills development, they are doing subjects that are not even assisting them. They are doing courses that do not assist them in terms of carrying their daily in the classroom.
You made your point.
Yeah.
Can you try just to be straight to the point?
Yes.
Straight to the point. I just want to know, to the department, have they considered the fact that there are schools that start from grade R in the rural areas? Né? They start from grade R to grade 5, then grade 6 to grade 9, then grade 10. I don't know, the senior secondary and the junior secondary, they are called like that. Does this not have an impact in the problems that we have in our education programs?
Thank you very much. Mr. Gunda is still in the room.
No.
He asked very strident, direct questions to me, but he's not yet to receive the answer. I want to respond to...
No, oh. You can't respond
Okay. Okay, I will respond to the committee. Thank you. But I'll respond last to that question then, Honourable Chairperson. Let me just say, Honourable Chairperson, about the various commitments. We spend the last couple of days on legislature activities, including public hearings and so forth. The program for the Portfolio Committee and Select Committee came out quite late. The program I'm going to is coming from the Presidency, so it's not on any action on our side of poor planning or anything like that. It's just a whole range of commitments that we're trying to balance. Let me also say that Mr. Sishi will be here for the duration, so any further questions can be directed at him. Okay. Furthermore, we welcome the opportunity to come back at a point that's conducive to speak to all of these questions in detail. Let me then start off with the questions in the order that they've been asked. A number of members raised the quintile system. That is under review at the moment. The department has done a number of investigations, research has been done, it's been discussed with the Council of Education Ministers, so indeed, the questions you raise and other members raise, Honourable Fiver, are precisely the things that need to be addressed, especially the thing about community around the school. It does tend, and I think Honourable Mube raised the same question in the context of Alex, it does prejudice schools, we found, and it's certainly an area we need to address. The difficulty we're encountering is how do you cater for some schools who've inherited good infrastructure compared to schools who haven't inherited good infrastructure, and how do you then still don't prejudice poor learners who go to that school? So it's something we're looking at, and there's a number of options on the table which we think are going to solve some of the problems. But with policy always, you solve some problems and you create other problems. So we've got to assess which of those is the best thing. In respect of also Honourable Member Fiver's points about going to school, and other members have raised similar points around society's involvement. This is a key leg of the strategy. It's a key leg to say that if we are going to make education work, and this is what the President has called for, is to make education a societal matter, we need to ensure that everyone plays a positive role in schools, which means mobilizing parents. Indeed, we've created with the unions and parent stakeholders this campaign called the Quality Learning and Teaching Campaign. And it's a campaign intended precisely for what many honorable members have raised, to mobilize different stakeholders who can go to schools and support schools. We know, though, that, and this the Deputy President has spoken about, we don't want a situation, Honorable Chair, where schools are disrupted. We've got to be very careful about that. To deal with that question, we're trying to develop very clear guidelines on how you can go to a school and support it rather than disrupt a school. So very much that is part of the agenda, and many countries have shown that that kind of approach can be very successful in supporting schools, very much so, in a proactive way. Let me then move away from there. Honourable Fiver raised specific questions as well about certain schools. I don't want to go into details now. You know, let me just say, with regard to specific institutions, if Honourable Members write to us as the National Department, we immediately have a system to contact the relevant province. Where there's a problem with the school, specific examples were stated here about resources or whatever, we then engage with the province, because provinces provide, right, in all instances. We engage with the province to ensure that that matter is dealt with. Where honorable members have raised these questions before and they haven't been resolved, please indicate that in the communication so that we can, in fact, ensure that we get a response to you in working with the province. Let's go then to Honorable Mube's questions there. She raised also very strongly the quintile system. And the primary question is Mpumalanga. What do we do there to avoid the situation? Two things, Honourable Member. For one, we've taken over administration of Mpumalanga's examination system, firstly, from administration funding. Secondly, we're working with them to ensure that the systems are put in place to a point where we'll have a sense of confidence, given the standards we've set, that Mpumalanga can take over their own exam. You're right. You put your finger on the nail that if we have a challenge in one province, it affects the whole country. So we've got to ensure that this thing is dealt with. So in every province, there's a protocol of standards which we send people out to assess whether there's compliance with those standards. If there's a problem with those compliance, we act to ensure that the integrity is upheld. It's non-negotiable that the integrity of the examinations are upheld continuously. So that's an important point. The 10-point plan, Honourable Member, is... In fact, everything we've written is in response to the 10-point plan, right, of what the current government came in with. But there's another 10 points. So there's two sort of like categories. And the second 10 points has actually become 12 points now, is the key outcomes of government as a whole, which is on the program, of which basic education is the number one priority. And then we've got health, rural development, and so forth. Now, if you look at the basic education one, we've responded to all of those, but we also say, in relation to those 10 points, how do we ensure they implement it? The critical point you raised was about stakeholder involvement. Again, the quality learning and teaching campaign is something we really want to push very strongly. The president has picked up on it as well. The minister is picking it up on it very strongly. And when we come back, maybe we should devote some time, Honorable Chairperson, to speak in more detail, especially to this House, given that it's the Council of Provinces. So I think that will be very critical for us to bring not just a presentation, but material that honorable members can use in the provinces. The next, Honorable Mashamayati, in terms of reopening of schools transport, that's a critical issue. The problem that one is constantly trying to solve in government, in basic education, is how do you deal with problems, especially in rural areas where population density is low? Because the one thing they did before was to have small schools. Now, small schools don't work because you have 15, 20 learners in a school, you can't provide enough teachers. So then you create a consolidated school. Then you run into a problem of transport. So again, when we try and solve one problem, you create another problem. Key is the transport issue. Key also is perhaps to look at boarding facilities. But again, those challenges, you are absolutely right, continue, and we've got to address. In terms of Honorable Plyke, I'll leave that to Mr. Sitchi. It was about exams in particular, but the one question about text and lesson plans and how do we account for rurality, another member asked that as well, the last speaker. Clearly, honorable members, when we develop lesson plans and workbooks, those, once they're developed in draft, they are tested in classrooms. And you've got to test them in different classrooms to ensure that you accommodate for different levels of language competence, different geographic contexts, and so forth. So to that extent, you try to ensure that those lesson plans are compatible. But obviously, there won't be 100% compatibility. What you then do in the way you support teachers in those contexts is to provide supplementary support to ensure that you deal with that. But that certainly is a big challenge and important question in relation to study guides and lesson plans. Caregivers, the honorable member at the back there was raising the question about caregivers and their levels of literacy. That's a big issue. That's a critical issue. And that's when I spoke about home background. So in addition to how we support teachers in schools and parents who come to schools, we need to look at parents who are sitting at home. And to that extent, we're saying radio, especially, you know, the 11 language radio stations, TV, what kind of guides we can give to parents is important. But again, I come back to the QLTC, Quality Learning and Teaching Campaign. Because that's where we're hoping people, and here honorable members are included, will work in communities and find out how best our materials can reach these homes where that kind of support needs to be given in accessible form. We've developed these materials. The question is, how do you make the link between the material and getting it into the home is where education needs to be a societal matter. Then in response to Honorable Gunda, as I said, it was a direct question. Do we take education of the children seriously? We do indeed, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. We couldn't take it more seriously. The call made by Honorable Gunda is that the plan, you know, we don't have a plan on paper. We agree with that fully. We want specifics. And yes, there are. Yes, the important thing that I try to emphasize in my presentation is that if you listen carefully to the President's State of the Nation address, he spent quite a bit of time talking about a new way of working, a performance-based way of working, where measurable targets are indicated. So in the current phase, a department and a sector cannot simply make promises. The promises we make in the strategic plan and in the sector plan I spoke about will be linked to measurable targets. And the executive has taken on itself to give itself measurable targets against which it will be measured. So again, it's not a nice-to-have plan on paper. It's a plan that has the basis for accountability through measurable targets. So that's critical. But the other thing is that when we speak about the department, We're also speaking about the sector. We're speaking about the national department and 9 provincial departments. And that is why I emphasize the point that we don't only, we can't stop at a department strategic plan. We need a sector action plan. And that sector action plan has these performance targets in it, not just for the national department, but for the entire sector, including each and every province against which they are accountable. And I'd like to make this plea and make this emphasis today here, Honorable Chairperson, that perhaps with regard to the sector plan, it's this select committee that's going to be very critical to us because it's a sector plan that includes provinces. And it's a sector plan by way of accountability that's perhaps best dealt with in this select committee. So I would look forward to working very hard with this select committee and looking at how we ensure that that sector plan does indeed form the basis of accountability. And Chair, going forward in terms of coming back, I think it's precisely around the details of what honorable members have asked here today, but also around these specific things that we need to speak to, around measurability, and around how we think that the new way of working is in fact taking us beyond a plan on paper. Because Honorable Gunda is absolutely right, and this is the problem we've had in the past. Very often strategic plans have just been strategic plans on paper, and what a national department puts forward is its vote. What we're trying to do now is to ensure that we go beyond that. We go into a sector plan, and we go into a plan that has measurable targets. Chair, again, I must apologize that there's this clashing appointment for which I'm chair, so I apologize for that.
Now I'm just going to head over to Umalusi to make a presentation, then we'll interact on all the presentations.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I will take the remainder of what I thought might not have been covered fully by the Director General. And I will start with the questions asked by Honorable Fiverr. I'm very touched by the story of the Kumpu and Nkwe community. I have personal experience. At some point, the minister asked me to visit Bunkwesa in Bladensburg to meet the school and see the conditions myself. I think for me, what is very profound in your comment is that those who have succeeded must not just disappear because they are the ones who are capable of interacting with the context of that community. I will report this to the minister, and I think that this is not the last time you hear from us on this, because there hasn't been a suggestion of that nature. We are just pleased that the success rate in the school like that is what it was.
Honorable Ncube, the question of the negotiables and the success in the, with regards to the buy-in in that, and the question of the 10-point plan. My understanding was that the question is that in terms of the sector plan, where we have adopted and integrated the 10-point plan into it, we must still make sure that aspects of that which relates to stakeholders still must go back to the stakeholders for buy-in, because that will lead to the similar success that we have received from the negotiation. I can assure you that this would be done. That is the plan, as the DG has indicated. Honorable Chair, I think the two other questions, one from Honorable Gunda, how serious is the department about a number of issues that he has raised? I would imagine that in the response by the DG, there is an attempt to show what it is that the department is doing. And I would imagine that at another time when we have an opportunity, we will be able to also further try to satisfy the honorable member. But not only that, I think the questions were also suggesting what needs to be done. And I think for me, that is the main thing, that the question was also suggesting and advice to the department in terms of dealing with the school. The Mir School in the Northern Cape, the Velalanga School, the issue of the overcrowding in the schools, especially in Velalanga, parent involvement, and how important this is with this. This presentation by Umalusi is going to cover some of the things which Honorable Blackie asked about the question of standards of the national examination system. I think what then, at the time when Umalusi is answering the questions, I would like to come in at that time, because I do believe that the essence of us in a system like this having a statutory body that is primarily tasked to look at standards. In their presence, I would like to hear their declaration. But I can assure you, all our examinations are approved by Umalusi in terms of their standards. Even the release of the results will not occur unless that has been declared. It's like the declaration of elections as being free and fair by the IEC. Our exams are declared free and fair by Umalusi every year. And therefore, on the basis of that, we believe that we are somewhere, not yet there where we want to go, but we are surely moving forward. Maybe the pace is not satisfactory, but I think the sector plan to us is going to be trying to deal with these issues. I think I'll end there. There are questions from Honorable de Villiers' habit of reading, which are also were raised by Honorable Fiver and Honorable Ncube, and the Honorable Member from Mpumalanga about lesson plans. I think also no one has raised this question of the contextualization of the materials that are being developed. That really undermines because the nature of our curriculum is not just about content, it's about values, it's about attitudes. It's about lot of things that makes us a different nation as South Africans. And therefore, it is in these workbooks and textbooks that we must see this. And so that's a challenge we are faced with. And I think we'll invite all South Africans to support us in ensuring that whatever materials we've sent to schools, they are mediated such that these aspects feature prominently in those materials that we send. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Shishi. Before I hand over to Umalusi, I just want to, you know, the issues, but like where I indicated that we'll have another session with the department. You know, the issue of learner transport, my experience is that there's no policy around that. That is why there's no consistency when you go to the provinces. I think one would like the department maybe to bring how far are you with the policy around the issue. And And then the other thing is the issue of skewed allocation of resources, which really is a challenge that we are still having. Just, you know, it leads also to the stigma that the public schools, state schools, they cannot produce a good result. I would like to see when we interact, what is the plan of the department to deal away with that stigma that public schools, or as we call them, Gatsby schools, they are not good and they cannot produce. And the other thing is the issue around the early childhood development, that when you interact with the provinces, they don't even have data, you know, for this center. You go to the rural areas, there are no infrastructure. Maybe one would like, in our next interaction, that department just to indicate how are you dealing, going to address that matter, because we really need to build a firm foundation from the grade art level. If we don't have infrastructure, if we don't have qualified teachers, how are we going to achieve the best results? I think it's for maybe something that I give as homework, that next time when we interact, those are the issues that we will need to interact around them. Let me just take this opportunity now to hand over to Malu. I'll be good in Kosa or next time. I'm practicing. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair Makhati. I, as I said, I'm John Palming, and I have with me the CEO of Umalusi, Dr. Mafura Kumetsi, who will complete the presentation. As an introduction, I would like to say that as a Council for Quality Assurance, Umalusi has a mandate to quality assure general and further education. We are here today to talk about matric. That's only one part of our work. We also have three assessment bodies whose assessments we quality assure, the largest of which is the Department of Education. But of course, we also have the Onafhanklike Afrikaans Eksamenraad and the IEB, the Independent Examination Board. We do exactly the same. We follow exactly the same process in all three cases. And those entail, quality assurance entail three processes. One is, of course, moderation of question papers, and moderation of marking. We also monitor the examinations, and we then standardize. And I'd be very happy to answer any questions. I know there were some questions by the honorable members about standardization, and I'd be happy to speak to that together with Dr. Rakumetsi. I also want to say that since our topic today is matric, my presentation is focused on that. Matric means different things to different people. Because there are different stakeholders in this country. So if it is a university, university people see matric as university admission. Then you don't have to look at the national senior certificate that way. The national curriculum statement was designed as the exit qualification. Exit qualification is the NSC of the national curriculum statement. As an exit qualification, they prepare people for life and for the world of work. But whether it is for university admission or exit qualification, it draws a lot of interest, because at the end of the day, the matric certificate is a selection tool, and because it's a selection tool, it has to have predictive capability, it has to have validity and reliability. But we are very much aware, Chairperson, of the various perceptions. Some are valid and some are not valid. Some are created by the media. Others have a lot of substance to it. And we're dealing with these at present, but we're dealing with it by learning from the past, always. We live in the reality of today, and we realize that as Umalusi, because we are the custodian, in the sense of the assets, which is quality in this country of education, we're also creating hope for the future. We also believe that there's always room for improvement, and that is why we welcome the opportunity of being here today to hear the Honourable Member's concerns about quality assurance of assessment, and we will take that quite seriously as we go back to our constituency. I'm not going to go into detail about many of these slides. I have slightly modified the one that we had sent in, and so and you will see why in a minute. I think the first thing we want to say when we look at the quality of the exams is we look at the numbers. Those numbers have been pointed out by Mr. Sishi in great detail, but I think what Umalusi has to say here is that there are two very important challenges that we face as an education system. The one is massification. Massification is a natural outcome of an education system that's non-racist and non-sexist and democratic, and so one must expect that there will be a steady increase in numbers as we go on, and that we have to remind ourselves that the national curriculum statement had been designed to ensure that most people, not the least people, most people achieve the minimum requirement for a pass. And while we embrace that, we as Umalusi have a responsibility to chase after another rabbit, which is the rabbit of quality. So those two rabbits do not always run in the same direction. So we have the rabbit of massification, and we have the rabbit of quality. Our job is to bring home the quality one. And that's our job, and we want to remain focused on that. This is one of the slides that's not in the presentation. I think that, as you can see from the slide that already pointed out, that there are some provinces that have improved greatly, some a bit less, and some have actually fallen back. Notably, KwaZulu-Natal, you can see the green point out to the improvement. KwaZulu-Natal has got a few thousand more passes in 2009 and in 2008, while Gauteng had maintained its level at 70,000 and so on. But as I said, Chairperson, we like to learn from the past, and I looked at since our first exam in the Democratic South Africa 1995, where we had 531,000 people taking the exam. If you then look at that slide and you look at the years, there was some decline in the numbers. We are back now to 2009, 552. 552,000 wrote the exam, and if you look at the number of passes this year, it was past year it was 334. If I now go back to 1997, you look at 555, approximately the same. There were only 261,400 passes, so almost 100,000 more in that period. To me, that's a very important indicator of which way things are going. So there are several questions that we can ask about that, just about the numbers. But certainly the numbers are increasing, but that doesn't mean the quality is increasing. And so we say, how do you talk about the quality of the results? And then the standardization of the exam, and what predictive quality does it have? Those are the questions that I briefly want to look at. The quality of the results is a thorny issue. There are lots of assumptions, and so I'd like to put them instead of assumptions, I'd like to put them as a question. Does more always mean less? I've just said that our numbers are increasing, but does it mean that it's worse? And I think that's a legitimate question and one that one would expect. And I think some universities have this statement from the University of Stellenbosch. It's a statement basically saying that because the numbers are increasing, the university has to develop its own measures to to interpret the meaning and value of the new NSC. And what's implied here, and this is not the only university, is that because the numbers are increasing, it generates mistrust, and so universities have to generate their own, develop their own tests, because they do not convinced about the value of the new NSC. I just want to point out that when the testing at universities, other than the matric exam, was first started, I was at the University of Cape Town at the time as a staff member there, and I know that the tests were developed there. Additional tests were developed not to keep people out, but to make sure that there's another reason to accept people. And it seems as if the tendency now these days, Chairperson, is to go the other way. Mr. Sishi has pointed out that when we talk about quality, we have to look at in what categories are people passing. And if you look at 2008, which is the one on my on the left, and the 2009, we see that at the top is the bachelor's passes, 2,000 more in 2009 have passed with a bachelor's pass. And less people have passed with a certificate pass. In fact, 7,000 less people have passed at the certificate level. So the quality of these passes have actually improved. What Mr. Sishi has also pointed out, Honorable Chairperson, is the worrying part is at the bottom here. We have 217 people that failed and 199,000 in the previous year. So there were over 17,000 more failures in 2009 than in 2008. Now, that pretty much wiped out the gains we had in numbers. There were more people that sat for the exam, and so the net effect was that most of that, the increase in numbers were wiped out by the increased failures. But this slide actually shows, again, it's not one of the slides that I sent earlier, but this slide shows, again, what I've just said, that the failures, 17,000 more, candidates, 18,000 more, and so the net effect is 341. The increases are all on our right. So for me, this is an indication of the increase in the quality of the passes, however one may talk about that. Just over two or three more other questions, Chairperson. Can we trust the standardization of the results? And that's one of the questions that one of the honorable members had asked. I just want to point out that the trustworthiness of the standardization of the examination is based on a methodology that goes back to 1918 when the Joint Matriculation Board was first established, and that same methodology is used today. Umalusi is just a new name, of course, with a new focus, but the one constant has been the standardization process. I'll be very happy to technically talk about that, but we use a large committee of people drawn from all the major universities, statisticians and educators together, a committee of over 20 people who do the standardization. It's not one person sitting in an office that does this. And we argue for a long time, we work late night, and we compare notes with ourselves and with the department. And it's this very important question because it is crucial to obtain equivalence from year to year and also to provide a constant product to the workplace. Dr. Akumechi will talk about the moderation of the question papers, the monitoring of the exam, the verification of the marking, the standardization. This is all part of our quality assurance process. And we believe, as I said earlier, Chair, and Mr. Sishi has pointed out, that apart from the statistical inputs, Umalusi considered qualitative inputs, and using sound educational judgment at the standardization meeting, we accepted mainly raw scores. Our preference is to accept raw scores. We do not want to adjust the scores, so we say, give us a reason why we should. And I'd be very happy to say which we adjusted up and which we adjusted down, but it's 10 of the one and 6 of the other. Third question, are we at a much worse place today than we were in 1995? Well, if you look at where we were in 1994, 1995, I don't have my pointer, but as you can see, in 1997, we had a low point because the pass rate in 1997 there was 47%. If you now take a line from there to where we are today, which is just over 60%, to me that's a trend line, Honourable Chair. That is the line that we have to watch. It's from that 47 to 60, and it's an upward line, it's not a downward line. And in short, that's all I want to say. I could be very happy to talk to that. The section in between 2000 and 2004 seems to be a period of growth, but I just want to point out that it's exactly in that period that we had 100,000 fewer learners sitting for the matric exam. And in fact, this slide here shows how that happened. If you look at the numbers on your left, the number of candidates decreased quite dramatically. If you look at 1999, and then you go to 2004, you will see how the numbers go down by to 467. What I want to notice is that the pass rate for the examinations has always been in the order of 18-15%, never really got beyond 18%. And with the new NSC, the results, the examination, university exemption is now 20%. It's not inordinately high, but it's an improvement. Just another question is, can higher education trust the NSC results? I think that I can't answer that question, Chairperson, because higher education has to answer the question. This is not, Umalusi is not there for that purpose. But I will participate next month in a forum at my old university, University of KwaZulu-Natal, where all the deans will be there and they will be presenting their evidence to see in the various faculties how the students of the last 2 years have been performing, and I'll be participating in that. And other universities are doing the same. Question number five, is the national curriculum statement of a lower standard than the previous curriculum? Well, I think it's important to say that although the NCS is a nationally set curriculum, internationally benchmarked, we at Umalusi have gone beyond that. And we had commissioned a research project. And this research project is very important. Honorable Chair, I have here two booklets here called the Maintaining Standards Project. There are three parts to it. The fourth part is being produced right now. We compare the old curriculum, higher grade and standard, with the new NCS curriculum, and we compare the examinations over the last 2 years with a higher grade curriculum. And just to say that benchmarking is done by very credible teams of people, and we've done it in these gateway subjects, English, geography, life sciences, mathematics, math literacy. We did both the curriculum evaluation and the exam analysis. And in the past year, we've added accounting, business studies, economics, and history. Both the curriculum as well as the exam analysis. Those are available in this form, but they're also available on our website. Just in summary, then Umalusi's research has shown that that standard of the national curriculum statement confirms that in most cases, the NCS presents a greater cognitive challenge than the past, a greater cognitive challenge. And that it also represents modern, updated, and more demanding versions of previous subjects. Now, there, I just want to mention this because I don't have time to talk about mathematics. The rest of my presentation really is about math and physical science, and I'd be very happy to come back to that if there are questions about that. But just to say that as far as the curriculum is concerned, Honorable Chairperson, for the old higher grade standard grade, what our research has shown is that the mathematics curriculum is somewhere in between the old standard grade and high grade, but more towards the high grade. And that's why we said that the pass of 50% in the NCS mathematics is equivalent to a pass in the old high grade, which is 40%. That's only in mathematics. In physical science, though, our research again will show that both in scope and breadth, the physical science curriculum lies outside, on the other side of high grade. So we have standard grade, high grade, and the physical science is on the other side of high grade. And so an easy question in the physical science NSC exam is still hard for the new learners. That's all I want to say, Chairperson. I would like to hand over to Dr. Rakometsi, because his presentation will deal with our standardization process.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm just trying to get to the part of the slide where I have to start. I want to thank you for the opportunity of coming to present to this Honorable House our quality assurance processes and the processes that we engaged in 2009 to quality assure the senior certificate examination, the national senior certificate examination. There are a number of processes that we engage in to quality assure the examination, and I'm just going to mention all of them and also go into the details of what we did. In 2009, we do the moderation of question papers. We do the moderation of site-based assessment. Some educators will call it continuous assessment. We do the monitoring of the conduct of the examination. We do the verification of marking and the standardization of marks. Now, coming to the number of question papers that we moderated, we've got 38 of them, and you'd note that a subject may have a number of papers. It may have a number of levels. Like in languages, we have home languages, and we have second additional languages and first additional languages. So the total of the number of papers is 130. The papers that have been submitted by the department to us, which were approved in the first instance, in the first moderation, were 44. Those that were approved or conditionally approved in the second moderation are 23, and those in the third moderation are 13. I need to just illustrate that it is the department that sells the paper, or the OAER, or the IED that sells the papers. And then they would have their own internal moderators. And by the time the papers are sent to us, where I'm talking to this slide where they were finally approved, you'd be having an Umalusi external moderator who looks at the papers to check whether the papers are according to the national curriculum statement and also whether they are according to the subject assessment guidelines. So that illustrates the levels at which the papers were approved and how many times papers were returned for correction. We also do the moderation of continuous assessment, school-based assessment. You'd know that the final mark that we have in the grade 12 examination is constituted of 25% school-based assessment and 25% of the final paper. Now, we did the moderation thereof, and this shows the scope covered in the different provinces. Accounting, for instance, in the Eastern Cape, history, Eastern Cape, life orientation, mathematics, and mathematical literacy, and it shows the scope that was covered throughout the country, province by province. I'm going to skip that slide. It also shows the monitoring of the examination, the writing phase. And in this slide, we've captured the number of examination centers by province, and the number of candidates enrolled province by province, and the number of centers that Umalusi monitored through its provincial monitors. So that will give you the statistics and the scope of the centers that we monitored during the writing phase of the examination. The marking of the examination takes place in different centers in the provinces, and you have recorded the number of marking centers per province. You also have the number of marking centers that we're able to monitor as Umalusi, and those that were visited by our monitors and those visited by the Umalusi staff. Because we have two categories of people. We have monitors that we contract, and we also have the full-time staff of Umalusi that does the monitoring. The moderation of marking is also part of our scope of quality assurance, and Umalusi also attends the memoranda discussions meeting, where the memoranda is discussed and the possible gaps in the memoranda are discussed, and also there should be a common understanding for all the marking centers that we are going to be running in the country in terms of the memoranda. It is during this memoranda discussion meetings where the memoranda are approved and signed off and finalized, and also the marking guidelines for all the subjects are finalized. Now, we also did, as Umalusi, centralized moderation of marking, and we indicate the subjects that we moderated in that fashion. The non-language subjects are mentioned in a different block, and the language subjects are also indicated in the other block. Those are the subjects where we called all our external moderators after the provinces had moderated and marked the papers, that we should also externally moderate them as Umalusi in terms of our quality assurance processes. Now, you'd observe that there would be areas in our monitoring and moderation of the processes where we observe areas of good practice. And there are also areas of concern. These have been shared with the department. We sat down with the department, we provided them with a document that shows the areas of good practice, so that those areas of good practice should be strengthened, and the colleagues are encouraged to keep up the good work in that area. And also, areas of concern, it is where we need some remedial action. To this end, the DGNI have agreed that our officials should meet, sit around the table and agree on the corrective remedial measures that are to be taken to correct anomalies in the system. But let me focus first on the areas of good practice. The papers generally cater for both weaker and high-performing candidates, because in any given class, you'd have weaker candidates and high-performing candidates. So the papers were balanced, and they were according to the subject assessment guidelines. In many cases, the November 2009 and March 2010 examinations were presented at the same time for moderation. This ensured comparability of the standards, so that at the time when the papers were set for the final examination of 2009, the supplementary papers were also ready, so that we could compare the standards and we could ensure consistency of standards. External moderators signed off the final papers before they were dispatched to the provinces for printing. The external moderators will ensure that the papers meet the standards as indicated earlier, and before the department would be allowed to send the papers to the respective provinces for printing, our external moderators will sign off those papers. We have observed great improvement in the monitoring of exams by provinces. I think the provinces have to be commended for that. And the security measures were intensified in the majority of centers across the provinces. And that is very, very important. Now, we've got also areas of concern. And in relation to the modulation of the school-based assessment camp, we observed that the majority of provinces do not conduct actual moderation of school-based assessment, task and learner portfolio. Moderation exercise is limited to a compliance audit, and that is an area that has to be corrected. Majority of the SBA tasks reflect over-reliance on past examination papers. Educators on their own lack creativity in developing suitable tasks, and that is worrying because they must have been trained in their professional training to develop these tasks. School-based assessment tasks developed by educators focus mainly on assessing the lower cognitive skills. That should be one. There should be a balance. High cognitive order questions should also be included in the school-based assessment. And the educators, we have observed that they have battled with the development and use of rubrics used for the scoring of learners. They can't use that. So it is an area that we feel the department has to give attention to. The implementation and assessment of life orientation requires serious attention. Life orientation, as the honorable members may know, is 100% internally assessed, and standards vary from one province to the other, and even within the one province, the standards vary. And that is one area that needs to be given attention. With regard to the monitoring of exams, we have observed incidents of improper registration of candidates, which results in duplications and some candidates not registered or registered for incorrect charges. When that happens, it may cause delays in the release of examinations because learners have not been appropriately registered. The appointment of suitable trained invigilators and chief invigilators is essential, so as to obviate problems relating to the flouting of even basic examination regulations. Those people must be trained. Otherwise, we'll have a recurrence of problems that are not supposed to be there in the running of the examination. The security systems in Mpumalanga during the printing, distribution, and storage of question papers require urgent attention. And also the criteria for the appointment of markers have to be strictly adhered to so as not to disadvantage candidates. You can't have a marker who's not teaching that subject. You can't have a marker who's not producing himself good results in a particular area because he'll not know certain parts of the syllabus. Therefore, learners will be disadvantaged in the process. So that area has to be corrected. Regarding the moderation of marking, we observed that the memoranda discussions for the small subject did not receive the same attention as the gateway subject. Gateway subjects are mathematics, physical science, English, those subjects that have many less. These small subjects do not get the same kind of attention, with very few people attending the memoranda discussion, and added to this was the absence of input from the provinces. So that matter needs attention. The problem with improper translation of question papers into Afrikaans is still cause for great concern, because if the papers are not properly translated from English to Afrikaans, it means the learners that are going to write the paper in Afrikaans are disadvantaged somewhat because the concept has not been properly captured, the questions do not convey the same kind of meaning in terms of the response that is envisaged from the candidates. Additions were made to the final memoranda without the consent of the Department of Basic Education and Umalusi, and we say that that practice is irregular. And some markers, we say, do not have the ability and experience to handle high-order cognitive-level questions that require insight and logical reasoning. So you wonder, if such a marker has been appointed, how does that affect the learners in terms of how the learners are going to score? There were instances of inaccurate totaling of marks and incorrect transferring of marks to the cover page during marking. And this is worrying because all provinces appoint examination assistants who have to check that the markers have added the marks correctly and they have transferred the marks correctly to the cover page, because the mark sheets are captured from the cover page of a script. So that the EAs are not doing their work properly is also cause for concern. The standardization of marks, the data on the raw distribution of 2000 did not correspond with data contained in the 2009 standardization booklet. The number of candidates reflecting the test analysis was also inaccurate. You'd notice that when we do standardization of marks, we do a comparison of what we did in 2008 and with what we are going to do in 2009. Now, if the raw distribution for 2008 is not available or is not accurate, that affects how we are going to standardize the marks. The data set submitted for verification of the resulting process was incomplete and sometimes not in accordance with UMAG's specification. This delayed the processes, and this has been registered with the department and corrective measures have been taken. We observed poor learner performance of learners in mathematics, physical science, and accounting. And these point to the problems with the curriculum as well as teaching and learning. Maybe just to pause a bit here, Mr. Sisi did refer to mathematics problems, where initially in 2008 the universities were complaining that the papers were too easy, and we have now pitched the paper at the right level through our external moderator. Now, everybody is complaining that the math paper is difficult. Now, the question is, should we simplify the paper or should the school lift the standard up to where it has to be, and which is where it is in 2009. We are submitting to this honorable committee that the standard of the math paper in 2009 was at the correct level. Coming to the physical science, we have observed that there may be problems with the age appropriateness of the curriculum. that some content may be not even for the first year of university physical science students, but second or third year. So we have to look at that, and we have advised the department accordingly. Coming to accounting, we have observed that in the old curriculum, and that is where the majority of accounting teachers have been trained, that the accounting syllabus did not include auditing and financial management. And the new national curriculum statement curriculum includes these two areas of work. Now we've advised the department to do some workshops for accounting teachers so that they are able to cover this new scope of the accounting syllabus. We want to make some recommendations to the department. We've already done that, and we'll be working with them to see to it that come the end of this year, we don't have a recurrence of the problems that we had at the end of last year. The moderation of the standard of school-based assessment must be implemented at the school and cluster level. Cluster level could be a second level or district level. We have to check for compliance as part of the moderation process so that we ensure that there is adherence to policy. And that all assessment boards should ensure that all educators are familiar with the policy requirements to ensure the meeting of national standards. Monitoring of examination, it is very important that properly qualified, suitably trained chief invigilators and invigilators are appointed for the running of the examination. Verification of marking, criteria of the appointment of markers should be strictly adhered to so as not to disadvantage the learners. And with regard to the standardization of marks, we say data submitted for standardization purposes must be accurate and in a specified format. Further recommendation, there is a need to establish a basis for the standardization of life orientation. UMADUS recommends that an externally written component be introduced to life orientation with a view to set a standard for assessment for the subject. The current situation where this subject is only internally assessed at school level is worrying, and it has to be corrected come the end of this year. There is an urgent need for very intensive teacher training, focusing on the content of the new accounting curriculum that I've already said. This must translate into effective teaching, learning, and assessment of the subject. I've already spoken about physical science, and that there seems to be challenges with regard to the breadth of the subject, the age appropriateness of the content, and that teaching and learning of mathematics needs to be strengthened so as to bring it to the required standard, because the standard is correct, but the teaching and learning have to be strengthened to bring it to the appropriate level. The majority of irregularities were of a technical nature, and these were reported to UMADUS in terms of established protocols and processes. Those were dealt with. Some irregularities were as a result of registration-related problems. For example, a candidate did not appear on a mark sheet. Some candidates registered on incorrect subjects. The major irregularity occurred in Mpumalanga with the leaking of five examination papers, namely mathematics paper 1 and 2, physical science papers 1 and 2, and accounting. These were reported to UMADUS in October 2009, and backup papers were moderated under tremendous pressure so that we ensured that the learners were able to write the fresh papers countrywide. On the 20th of December 2009, UMADUS was informed by the DOE that the investigation has revealed that other papers might have been compromised in Mpumalanga. An official report was sent to UMADUS on the 29th of December, and the Executive Committee of UMADUS Council met on the 30th of December and agreed that the matter should be investigated further. Based on the information in the report of the Department of Basic Education, UMADUS decided not to approve the release of the Mpumalanga results at its approval meeting of 4 January 2010. The Assessment Standards Committee of UMADUS was tasked to do a thorough verification of the Mpumalanga results between the 4th and 6th of January 2010. Now, the honorable members may be interested to know the methods used to verify the results of Mpumalanga province. We did a comparison on the of the average performance of schools in 2009 with their average performance in 2008 per subject and based on their raw marks scored in both years. This is a comparison. The standard deviation of these raw marks were also compared, as well as the difference between the raw examination mean and the raw school-based assessment mean between 2008 and 2009. Small positive differences in these means from 2008 and to 2009 would mean that there were positive interventions. Significant differences would indicate that there were possible irregularities. I need to indicate that the investigation showed that most of the differences were negative, indicating that there was a downward trend in the performance of candidates in Mpumalanga. Based on the investigation, the Assessment Standards Committee concluded that there was no indication of any patterns to suggest systemic inflation of results in Mpumalanga. Umalisi Exco, under the leadership of Professor Volming, the chairperson of council, presented its findings to the minister on the 6th of January 2010. Based on this, Umalisi Council took a decision to approve the results of Mpumalanga. And the minister released the results of Mpumalanga with the rest of the results of the whole country on the 7th of January 2010. Now, in conclusion, Chairperson, the findings of the quality assurance process are a clear indication of a maturing system that has, on the other hand, made positive strides towards improvement in certain areas of assessment and examination, but on the other hand, still has a few challenges that need to be addressed. And those challenges have been registered with the department. The quality assurance of each of these processes presented above was conducted based on Umalisi criteria. Umalisi uses criteria that are subject to constant review and refinement to ensure that they are in line with current trends in assessment and examination. As a final quality assurance measure, Umalisi moderated the final marks awarded to the candidates. This is done through rigorous standardization process carried out in line with established principles and procedures. Through this process, Umalisi ensures the consistency of the national senior certificate examination over time and across the provinces. Apart from the statistical input presented, Umalisi considered qualitative input as well as very sound educational reasoning to arrive at the 2009 standardization decision. We are proud to indicate that in the main, the candidates' raw marks were accepted. There were very few instances where it was necessary to perform minor adjustments to the candidate's raw marks. I need to indicate the subject where we did upward adjustment and downward adjustment. As indicated earlier by both Professor Volming and Ms. Fishi, we had downward adjustment in six subjects, and I'm going to mention them for your record, Chairperson. They are Afrikaans home language, isiNdebele home language, Siswati home language, Tshivenda home language, agricultural management practice, hospitality studies. We did upward adjustment in the following subjects, Honorable Chairperson: English home language, Sesotho home language, Setswana home language, Mathematics paper 3, accounting, economics, engineering, graphics and design, geography, physical science, and that gives you the 10 subjects. In 41 subjects, the raw marks were retained. I'll not be able to read the list as the list is too long. I need to further indicate that, in general, Umalisi is pleased with the manner in which the 2009 National Senior Certificate Examinations was administered. Umalisi acknowledges that a number of technical irregularities were reported, but these were addressed in a fitting manner, as indicated earlier. The few serious irregularities reported were also afforded proper investigation and resolution to ensure that the credibility of the 2009 National Senior Certificate Examination is maintained and it is not compromised. Umalisi takes this opportunity to express appreciation to the national and provincial departments of education for their concerted efforts in ensuring a credible examination. We also express our appreciation to all the relevant stakeholders for the necessary support given in line with Umalusi Quality Assurance Initiative. We thank you, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Michael Mansi. I think members are already on. But before that, I just want maybe to check with Umalusi that this thing of having, you know, or three types of examinations, the one from Department of Education, IED, and the African, it's like it's also contributing to this discrimination and also the issue of the security and so forth, that if you don't have, you can't be able to be registered to write the IDE, you know. That's my personal view. Maybe I just want to check, because personally I feel that also it does contribute to the problem that we are having as a council. And before I hand over to the members, I just want to check this worrying factor that personally I can't just say I should put it aside and forget about it. The issue of the quality. We once had a presentation from the Department of Science and Technology, Mr. Shishi, where they indicated that according to their research, you know, for black or let's say for students who have learned, studied with the former black institutes and universities, it's very difficult for them to get employed compared to those former model institutions, which to me is a really worrying factor, because it says that the quality of education right from the beginning, it means we don't have that quality education. It means really we still have a lot to do with the department, and also it also indicates that the issue of human resources generally is something that we really have to deal with, that because we've got children from rural farm schools. If our educators there are not qualified, what is that to expect from Melana from that school? Really is a challenge. I'm just going to give over to the members to raise questions and where they want to make comments, maybe to add to their comments. It is the Honorable Saiba, Mube, Boroto, and Plaki. Those who will warm up later will give them an opportunity, but only for one question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I really appreciate it. I first want to say that I'm very impressed by this complete report by Umalusi, and I'm very positive and about the passionate way that the administration also bring it over to this committee. I'm really impressed. There's a few things. The one thing to me that is a bit of a worry is the marker's quality, especially after the matric results, when people fail and afterwards they get reassessed these papers, and then all of a sudden there's a hell of a big difference on the results. That people, all of a sudden, like if it was a 1 or 2%, but there were some instances where there were very big differences in the points. And that is the marker's quality that is really a problem to me. Then we were talking about the standardization of maths. It was obvious that the maths paper, according to some of the people, was very difficult. But then it was looked into in the matric result or the matric maths paper of 2009, and it was actually seen that this maths paper was on the same standard than the previous standard grade. And this I want to just know about the standard, because as I say, some people were saying it was so difficult, and then it was then apparently or eventually said that it was actually on the previous standard grade level. I would also want to bring this to your heart that, you know, we are saying that all the children must have science and maths. But if you look at this, we need to see that maths, if you look at the totality of it, the top 20% perhaps becomes accountants or BA degrees or BSc degrees. It is a disadvantage to push a child to try and achieve 25% in maths. It's not going to help such a child. We should rather try and empower children to take mathematical literacy there. It is more to his disadvantage failing it totally on a 20% or 25%. We are disadvantaging the student. And then again, as well, when applying for work, you know, I spoke to a few of the headmasters. When teachers are applying for jobs at a school to become a teacher, the headmasters have a big problem, because if you look at the qualifications of the matric qualifications, some matric, what standard of matric is, you know, when I want to employ someone and I'm looking at the different levels of matric, I hope it is standardized to a level where you can say that this guy's matric and this guy's matric is on a level, because there are such different levels of matrics, and the employers out there are not certain on which level matric these students are. So that if you can get clarity on that, Madam Chair, I'm not going to bore you guys with a lot more, but that is it. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Chairperson, the first one will be on the historically 30% to 40% kind of schools in the country simply did not offer any mathematics beyond grade 9. It's not a question that is directed to you as Umalusi, but it's a Department of Education's question. And us having an interest also as people that are here to say, I think this is a challenge for the country. We know there's a challenge on the capacity or capabilities of the educators in relation to maths and science. And there has been some interventions, intentions from for appointing foreign teachers, i.e. Zimbabwe and the rest, whilst we are developing our own. But from where one was sitting, where he's sitting, one knows that the foreign teachers are appointed temporarily, 3 months, 6 months, whatever. And when you listen to them teaching, they have a very high, good quality of the content of math or science. And we have the Funza Lushaka, but the slowness in terms of us developing our own caliber and deploying them. So I'm not sure whether we have some achievable time frames in terms of this is the intake, understanding also that universities also are crying foul to say we produce these distinctions of maths and whatever. However, they lack, when they get to university, content of the same mathematics and science. So I'm not sure in terms of what can we do, or you are thinking about something to take us somewhere out of that. The other one is on the accounting. Other people use, it might not be a researched thing. This accounting organizations or universities applying some measures of gatekeeping to say, hey, we may not have capacity if so many students qualify for maths or whatever, it means you have to open up engineering, science, and all those things. Now we're finding out that there are some areas that our curriculum has not covered. Now we are suggesting some review or additional to that. But if you set up the questions with the information or the content that learners were not exposed to, whom do you blame when learners are not able to achieve? Because your findings and recommendations are only talking to the markers and chief markers, but it's not talking to the people that are setting papers. I may link that with those subjects that you have done upward adjustments to say, from where I sit as a layman person, is to say, if you effect the upward adjustment, then there were some serious problems in terms of the standard of setting. Maybe they're too high for the students, and then we have to apply that so that you don't. Students are not punished for the problem of the people that are setting. But there's no recommendation that talks to. We need to also strengthen either those high people that are setting questions above the level of the content or the level of the grade class. Language. Yeah. The last one is on how you use the terminology. Masha Mai talked about, you talk of standard grade and high grade interchangeably, whereas we don't have it. And it's in your document, higher grade and standard grade from 1995 to 2009. I mean, those terminologies confuse the public, confuse the educators. So I'm saying we need to, once you understand how you contrast your explanation, but if we perpetually use those languages and the public say no, that does no longer exist, but we use it for comparison, I'm not sure whether we are promoting some stability or not. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson, coming from Mpumalanga, the presentation recently talks about Mpumalanga not having done well in examination. I'm really concerned. But the first question that I would pose to Umalusi is that they are talking about standardization. And when doing that is where there is an upward and downward adjustment of marks. Is it really necessary for this adjustment? Or what is it that Umalusi has done to make sure that the question papers are of acceptable standards, so that this can be avoided? I believe that this adjustment might even affect the learners when they go for higher education. That is the first one that I wanted to talk about. And in so saying, also, it has Umanus made sure that the teachers or examiners are thoroughly trained? What have they done to make sure that they have been thoroughly trained so that the question papers can be of good standard and avoid the standardization? Secondly, I believe that the Umanusi has to make sure that all the systems are in place and the provinces or education is ready for administration of exams and all. Now, how do they make sure that there is that readiness for administration of examination so that, you know, the things should not be blamed on the collapse of the system at the tail end, whereas at the beginning, how did they make sure that things are in, systems are in place and are ready? I remember there was a media statement where they just said, examinations in Mpumalanga have collapsed. And I got worried because the other thing, there is this IT system for making sure that there is effectiveness in capturing, in distribution and all. So how do they quality assure that IT capacity has got that the capacity to administer this exam, so that they even avoid. Mpumalanga is one of those provinces where our results are outstanding every year. So I tend to ask myself, how is their IT system working? Because I remember in 2008, there were new systems that were introduced called Integrated Examination Computer System. And at that time, system, I understand it was not certified. Is it now certified that it has been used, or is it... has it already been certified? Let me just leave it at that. The other thing is, what is MALUSI's role in the development of comprehensive risk management plan? Because we must expect that. So there must be a risk management plan to ensure that there is integrity of this examination, and examination is not compromised. I don't like the I'm not defending Mpumalanga, but I say, what role have they played as the custodian of this examination at all? Lastly, let me go to the examination on life orientation. I was told, I looked into the books of my kids sometimes, and looking at life orientation, I think that was the best move that the education system has come up with, because to me this is a life skill, and it has got more to do with values and morals, and we want that, you know, to be and living study skills and all that. Now, I'm saying I welcome this examination thing, but let us not forget the nature of the subject, which says to me we cannot assess it like other subjects, because the practical part thereof should be done. I'll come back. Thank you.
Chairperson, I'm worried. I'm worried about how we approach the entire education system in this country. I've just asked a question. What was actually wrong with the standard grade and higher grade papers? You see, why I'm getting worried? Actually every year in, year out, when there is an attempt to improve the system, there is a tendency of doing away completely with what we have at hand, introducing extremely new things. And for sure, those things made the system collapse completely. It actually makes, even if you go street in a location, people asking you about the system, you are unable even to explain. So I want to find out, because I cannot explain. If I look at these papers, metric papers, I cannot explain to an ordinary parent at the street what is wrong with the old system and this one, in terms of quality, in terms of the standardization. And there is a lot of saying, Chairperson, that you read it in newspapers, you hear radio comments, that most of graduates who are graduating now, they are unable to stand up and have a command. It's either in speaking properly in English or writing skills and all those things. But they are graduates. They are in the street. They cannot be employed. What makes that situation? Is it that our view of a standard dropping actually, or making them to be unemployed? You have raised that question as well, Chairperson, that we've got graduates in the street. We are told because they are from, I will make an example with our province. Our province has two universities. Both of them are Northwest University, Potchefstroom campus and Northwest campus. you will find that they will prioritize a student who graduates from Potchefstroom campus over the student who is from the Mafeking campus on the basis that it's a blessed, you know, majority of teaching staff, they are black people. So isn't the question of standard, why can't we interpret it and explain it to everybody? And then the last point that I want to make, it was captured correctly by Chief Director. I agree with him completely that the national assessment and quality assurance and the actual teaching and learning are two different things. I agree completely. But I want to find out, what does the National Education Department and Melusi try to bring these two so that these two can complement each other in a view of producing the quality that we want? I will pause just there, Chairperson.
One of the questions I've got is goes around the standard of the teachers to teach the math and science. Now, previously we do know that not all the teachers were actually trained to teach math and science. Now, the Department of Education just decided that all the students and the learners in this grade must now actually write exams about it. What does Umalusi actually do to let the education department do something so that the teachers can actually be equipped to teach these subjects? Because if you as a teacher cannot fully understand the subject, yeah, and all the challenges in that subject, you're not able to teach it. You yourself must understand it. You must actually be an expert in that subject. The other one, the second question, my colleague already posed that question that goes around the security of the exam papers, the safekeeping of that. Can Umalusi just elaborate on what methods did they put in place to better the safekeeping of those? And then I'm not in agreement, and it is not acceptable to me that there is a downward adjustment of marks, because actually that is the performance of the learners in that exam paper set by the authority for them to write. If there's an upward adjustment, then definitely I myself and all the people outside there will understand that there's a problem with the exam paper, and that's why the department decided to upwards the adjustment. But the downwards adjustment, I'm not so very comfortable with that. And I think we must just stand by the point that if you set a paper all the other things goes with that, then that is the mark which you have to accept. That is the progress and the performance of the learners. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. Chairperson, I'm from Eastern Cape. I just want to know, when Umalusi was doing the scope of quality assurance in the process of marking, did they come across, or did they knew that in one of the centers, because I see the monitoring system, they are not monitoring all the centers, maybe it's because of the shortage of staff and the workload on them, the authenticity of the results in the province, because there was no preparing by the markers, that process of markers before they go into the center and mark the papers, there's a preparation that they are doing, or something like the preparation that they are doing before they go to the center, things that they have to do in the centers and things that they have not they are not supposed to be doing. That the markers, when they came back from the marking centers, they were complaining because in 2009 they've never done that. That's why I say, what is the authenticity of the results of Eastern Cape? And also, I've heard the gentleman, sorry, I'm not sure of the position, saying they take educators or markers that are doing well in their subjects, and those markers, they are marking those papers. But is this also real? Is this happening really? Because how are they going, how do they know that this educator has done good in his or her, in her sight with the subject that she or she is marking? Because I've got I'm very skeptical in that issue, because there are people who are just going on marking papers, whereas they are not doing well in their subject. And also in the appointment of EAs, the EAs that are appointed, are they, I'm not sure, it seems as if Ms. Broto have asked this question, are they trained? Because if they are trained, I think this inaccurate totaling of marks will not happen if they are well trained in their job. To the honorable or the Mr. Sisi, to the grade 10 people, can't we focus more on the grade 10 people so that they can take direction on what are they going to do after matriculation? The selection of subjects, can't we do it in grade 10, the selection of subjects and the direction they have to make, a sort of a guidance to give those learners in grade 10? And Chairperson, I think that's all from my side.
Thank you, honorable members. I'm going to hand over to Umalusi and the department to respond to that on the issue.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm going to answer some of the questions and leave the rest to Professor Volmink and Mrs. Sishe. It was our wish to categorize the questions, but in the limited time that we have, it's not possible to say those that deal with marking, and we are not able to do that now because of the time constraint and tabulating the questions accordingly. We may not have time to do that. I just need to indicate that the fact that we have different examination bodies is allowed by legislation in this country. Different bodies are allowed to constitute themselves accordingly and meet a particular criteria for them to run an examination, which will then be quality assured by Umalusi. Without the removal of such clauses from our laws, we cannot stop as Umalusi organizations running the examinations. So all I'm saying is that the consolation here is that all those bodies that are allowed to run the examination that we quality assure should be doing the national curriculum statement. If they don't do the South African qualification, which is the national curriculum statement, they're not allowed to run the examination in this country. Further, that all these bodies are subjected to the same quality assurance processes. So we have the consolation in that regard. And when we issue a certificate of Umalusi, we don't specify which examination you wrote. It is just the national senior certificate. So that there will therefore be no discrimination in the eyes of the employers and in the eyes of the higher education institutions to say this one comes from IB, this one comes from OER, this one comes from the department. The question regarding the markers, and why when learners do the remarking, in some instances the marks improve. I must submit that it may be that also marks may go down when the learner marks does the remarking. I just want to sketch a process that is run by Mrs. Hish, which is a foolproof process where you have a marker marking a script, and then we have a senior marker taking a sample, a particular percentage of a sample of scripts, remarking them to check whether this particular marker is adhering to the memoranda, and that is not disadvantaging the learners. And also the chief marker, taking a sample of the script that has been marked by the markers and the senior markers to check whether there has been no problem, just to check the standard and consistency in terms of the standard. Now, I've been a marker myself, and I want to submit that human error comes in with concentration, because this happens in a short, very short space of time, and it happens that there could be a human error. Hence, I want to submit that there will be instances where markers may go up, where the markers may remain the marks may remain the same, or still be brought down when the person marks through the remarking. So the human element, the human error, comes in here. It kicks in, and it's something that we can do very little about. The whole notion of standardization, and maybe I'll come back to this question several times, and Prof. Volmik will come back to it, is that we have to ensure that there is consistency in the qualification that we certify as UMADUS, year after year, and even in individual subjects. If we say a learner has performed at this level, when we say it is at a particular level, in 2007, 2008, 2009, those levels must be comparable, because that will be sending confusion into the system to the employers, to higher education institutions, because they will not know at what level this particular learner or symbol is pitched. Hence, standardization is very important. We standardize because we want to ensure consistency in the performance of learners, in the performance of what we say is a symbol that this learner has obtained. I want to just indicate that, as Professor Volmik has indicated, the methods that we are using to standardize are not only used in South Africa. They're used the world over. And in South Africa, they've been used since the days of the matriculation board. Matriculation board, Southset inherited the same system, and UMADUS has taken that on board. But let's take a subject where we see that the external moderator has not done his job, the examiner has not done his job properly, and the internal moderator. I'm going to cite an example of Isindebele. And say, before I even give the example of Isindebele, say, I get a list of external moderators that I have to fire after a particular exam, because they have not adhered to the national curriculum statement, they have not adhered to the subject assessment guidelines. Honourable members will appreciate that, as a CEO of UMADUS, as the chairperson of UMADUS Council, we are not able to do this moderation of the subject. We have to assign people who do this on our behalf. And where we feel, when we do the standardization, that they've not done justice to the work, I get an instruction from the chairperson of council that, please, we don't need this person. I've got a list now of people that I have to deal with because they've not maintained the standard. A case in point here is in the bed, where we had to bring the marks down, where we felt that we've been let down by the external moderator, where he has a diagram in the question paper with the examiner. They've agreed, before the paper could be approved. We've got a diagram, and the questions count for 50 marks in a home language. First, a home language paper is in the bed. You've got people queuing, like they would queue for elections, and they're going to the voting booth, voting station. And the question is, what do you think is happening here, and what has happened to our country over the years? 50 marks. You cannot allocate such marks. Such a person is not supposed to be in our system. Same question paper, you have a diagram of a person running from a house that is on fire. The question is 50 marks. What do you think is happening here? Now, by the time we observe those things, as the people who are running the organization, the paper is written, the external moderators approved it on our behalf, what do we do? Do we not bring the marks down? We have to bring the marks down, because otherwise we are fooling the students to say you are an A student in Isindebele when they have written those kinds of questions. But I want to assure you, Honorable Chairperson, that where such things happen, we cannot retain those in external moderators. And I think that will also obtain for Mrs. Fisher, which is the internal moderators and examiners. Let me also indicate, I think I've dealt with the question of people who who said that he was at the wrong level. With regard to Mpumalanga and whether we did the monitoring of the examination in a comprehensive manner, where we do comprehensive risk management, the Umalusi staff members go to all the provincial examinations to check their state of readiness. We monitor, we administer a checklist, we do the quality assurance, we check for gaps in the system. And we're able to give feedback to Mr. Sish's processes to say, we are happy with the way things are. We are sure that you are ready to run the examinations countrywide, having looked at the systems of all provinces. What we cannot quality assure is what is in the minds of individuals who are having evil plans in terms of cheating the system or shortchanging the system in whatever way. That we cannot give guarantee to. And some of these things do happen. Yes, staff members sitting there, they've got their own plans. When you go there, everything is correct. The processes are correct. There's nothing that will bring doubt to you. Let me just indicate that what we quality assure as Umalusi is a curriculum that has been approved by the Ministry of Education. And that is in relation to the question raised by the Honorable Member, Honorable Plati, where he says some graduates that we find in the streets do not have the command of the language. They are not just convincing. We quality assure a curriculum that has been approved by the Ministry. And my sense, having been head of education in the Free State and chief director for curriculum, is that there is a thorough consultative process before a new curriculum can be allowed to operate in our schools. And we then do not do anything about it as Umalusi, because we also participate in those processes beyond the approval and the approval of the curriculum and it being certified as policy for this country. There's nothing that we can do. We just have to quality assure against that curriculum. In terms of what do we do to ensure, as Umalusi, the safekeeping of paper, the standards of teachers who teach the papers and so forth, I need to just clarify a distinction between our role as Umalusi and the role of the department. The Department of Education does the provisioning of education. That is, to provide the teachers, classrooms, desks, chalk, you name it, including the curriculum. The Department of Education, until now, also does the assessment. We do quality assurance. We don't provide teachers. We don't provide. We can only give advice on the basis of the research that we do. We give advice to the department to say, according to the research that we have done, these are the problems that we have observed with accounting. And you advise them to deal with those. In terms of the safekeeping of the papers as well, we don't provide for the safekeeping of the papers. We can advise to say, you're running a risk there are gaps there, as a quality assurance body. Where the honorable members pick up problems, maybe it is too late for members to wait and say, a process was flawed in the Eastern Cape. It is very, very much wise that those matters should be raised with Mr. Sishi on time, so that Mr. Sishi could have his interventions. And also just indicate that my observation, having worked in the sector for quite some time, is that examination time is rumor time. And in most instances, having run examinations in the Northwest and in the Free State before I became head of department, sometimes you'd be chasing after something that is not substantiated, you waste your energy. But I want to really submit that where such allegations come through the honorable members of the House, they'll be taken seriously. It'll be taken seriously. The last question that I want to respond to is the question of ensuring that markers do well in their subject. And I'm talking from my background as the head of examinations in the Northwest and in the Free State and head of education ultimately in the Free State. Today, in the Free State, we had agreed and we had implemented this policy that there will be no marker that will be appointed if it's not producing good results. And we had a benchmark to say, if you produce 60% and less results in grade 12, you are not qualified to be a marker. And we stuck to that. We will check through the principals, we'll check through our own systems before we appointed the people. So there are mechanisms to ensure that people that are appointed to be markers are people who can produce results. Because otherwise, how do I how do I have learners when I'm not competent myself in the teaching of the subject? I want to pause, Chairperson. Thank you.
No, I will just quickly look at whether Dr. Rakumeti's comments have just covered all the questions that had been raised, and I think he has, in fact, done so. If I just briefly look at Honorable Fiber, it's raised the question not only about the Marcus quality, but also about the math, mathematics. I think that I do have data to show that whereas in 2008 the subject assessment guidelines were not followed correctly in the examination, in 2009 it was almost exactly what was asked for. In terms of whether that is high grade or standard grade, well, I've said before, a pass of 50% on that exam is then a high grade pass mark. Math and math literacy, there's a big discussion here, which I'm checking my impulse not to get into because of time, but the difference between math and math literacy is not a difference in degree, it's a difference in kind. It's a totally different thing. What I was going to say, and I don't want to open that discussion again, is that if there were 290,000 people doing mathematics in 2009, 130,000 of them passed, more or less. So what happens to the other 160,000 for mathematics? Now, we have to say, in this system of having one mathematics, we've harvested, we've doubled the number of people passing at the 50% level. In the past, the old higher grade system only produced 20 to 25,000 people. Now we got 52,000. However, one, and I know the Honorable Nube is uncomfortable with this nomenclature, but I have to use it just to make the point that the old, a lot of the people, those 160,000 people, were the people that in the past would have done standard grade math. The people doing math literacy are the people that didn't do any mathematics before. So now the social, you know, you can make a social justice argument that for those 160,000, the best they could have hoped for was a pass, and they didn't get it. Whereas if they did the old standard grade math, to use they stood a chance of passing or even getting a B or an A. Now, that raises a question, and of course, Mr. Sishi and the department is looking into that, is how do we accommodate the aspirations of our learners? So, we talk about possibly a core and an extended, not high grade, standard grade. But this paper 3, and I've got data here which we don't have time to show, only 13% of the schools in this country offer maths paper 3. 13%. And the highest of that is in Gauteng in the Western Cape. In KwaZulu-Natal, it's like 5% of the schools. So very few schools are doing the extended curriculum. So how can we now have a core and an extended which covers everybody's needs? And I think that's really the point. I don't want to go into much detail. I think Honorable Nube also asked the questions about the 30 to 40% schools. And I think the Honorable Member there had implied, so if we now have everybody doing mathematics, you know, are we sure that we have the right teachers? And the foreign teachers, and I agree with Honorable Member Nube that the foreign teachers, certainly if I look at Zimbabwean teachers who I often observe, they have a very big command of not only the language, but also of the mathematics. And one can't run away from that. I do think that the department, of course, is aware of that. There is talk of maybe thinking about an academy of math and science where teachers can be trained adequately, but it's not the Umalusi competence, so I really can't. Yeah, it was addressed to Mr. Sishi. The accounting, Honourable Member had pointed out the content coverage. Well, the point is that the subject assessment guidelines is not just about the cognitive level, but also the content, and we have to go according to that. The problem with accounting is that in the past, Honorable Chair, that in the past, the accounting was bookkeeping. In other words, it was focused on financial accounting. The curriculum has now changed to include auditing and managerial accounting, and the teachers are not focused on that. And so we need training, because they've been trained just in the old financial accounting. And then, yeah, I've already apologized for the use of high grade, standard grade, but I hope the Honourable Member understands that sometimes that becomes necessary. Honourable Member Barotto had raised questions about standardization. I think these questions were handled very adequately by Dr. Rakometsi, both the administration and the risk management plan. I think it is true, that's a very good question, and I think that what Umalusi does do is that it will go ahead of time to look at the readiness of the system, and it will point out to possible risks. But it's up to the assessment body to make sure that happens. We don't own that. We are just the quality assurer. But we do help to build a better. The issue of the life orientation and the standardization of that, Honourable Chair, is an important and a very good point. And I think it's a good argument that the Honourable Member Barotto makes to maintain the nature of the assessment. The problem for Umalusi is that if there's no norm by which to go, then we can't standardize it. So we need one task, at least one task, not the whole thing, but at least one task that's nationally set that we can use as a benchmark. Otherwise, it's all just site-based assessment. Just very briefly then, Honourable Blakey had expressed concern about why it was necessary to go high grade and standard grade, and maybe Mr. Tishy would probably be in a better position than me to engage with that question. I just want to say from Umalusi's side, though, I want to say that I would encourage Honourable Blakey to read this maintaining standards report, because it does actually speak about whether the NCS is a step forward or a step back. Also, Umalusi is participating in international benchmarking, not just a South African one. And the initial signs are very positive about this curriculum. I must say, as a math teacher, as a math person, I'm very proud to take the mathematics curriculum to international conferences. And people love it. This is a very progressive curriculum. So I'm far from embarrassed to hold up our curriculum. The issue about teaching is another question, of course, and Honourable de Villiers has reached. You can't teach what you don't know. You know, and that's a basic question that I think we need to address. The Honourable de Villiers has also spoken about what is Umalusi's role in the quality assurance of teachers. Well, I want to say, Honourable Chairperson, that in the new GenFedqua Act, that the mandate of Umalusi to also, as it develops competence, to also take on additional responsibility, in particular the quality assurance of provision of education, which is basically the teaching. That has been taken out. So the initial Umalusi Act had it in. It had now been taken out, so that's no longer an Umalusi competence. I think I've covered most of those next questions. Thank you.
Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, thank you. Most of the questions have been covered in the responses. It might be necessary just to add some nuances and some detail in the rest. But I would like to start by referring to the last comment by Professor Volmi, that you cannot teach what you don't know. That is fundamental to the question of the quality of education in our country. I think it's important that we acknowledge this. Not just the education department. The education department employ teachers, but we don't train them. We're not a college for producing teachers. We employ teachers with a qualification to teach. And if the quality of that teacher is the kind of quality that Professor Holman was explaining. We should look at where the bread, the bakery, not the shopkeeper, who produced the bread. Now that's higher education. And because the political discourse in our country is such a class discourse, the voices of those who are at the receiving end of injustice are not heard. And therefore those who sit in ivory towers continue to live in the comfort of the debate that doesn't speak directly to the issues that pertain to them. The issues of gatekeeping. Who does this? It's happening. We all know it's happening. When I'm here as an official of the department, there's nowhere else I can go. This is the last point. After I've made my presentation here, I leave this place either with the hope that something is going to happen or a feeling that we are not getting anywhere. We have made these presentations about the results. I've worked for this department for the last 25 years. In the last 5 to 6 to 7 years, I've been presenting results to Parliament. And each time, I've never had an occasion like what has happened now, where I felt that we are really engaging truly and honestly with the results. Our minister has actually refused that we justify any wrong and of the past. We don't blame the past. Actually, if you look at the presentation by the DG this morning, it borders on three key things: accountability, performance management, and remediation. Those are the three cornerstones and pillars of the presentation that was made today. That accountability, we are not talking about accountability of teachers. The minister says the president is saying, my cabinet will sign performance agreements. This is a serious matter. Now, how we take this, where I'm going now, it's a question of whether my officials who employ markers who are not qualified, how do I interpret the issue of accountability and implement it? And if I don't do it, action must be taken. That is my understanding of what we are dealing with in this. Mpumalanga, my Honorable Puruto, we must just be intolerant of what happened in Mpumalanga. We must not speak English about it. We must just be intolerant. We must just go there and fix it. I've warned the minister that it's not only in Mpumalanga that we have had problems. We do have problems in the Eastern Cape. We do have problems in Limpopo. Even in the Western Cape, we have problems. Obviously, the capacity of our system would be such that we will prioritize the areas where there is gross areas of But it doesn't mean that we're just looking at there and we are not doing anything about it. Our minister has invited the portfolio committee. As I'm here, the portfolio committee is in Mpumalanga. That shows the commitment at political level. But how do we make the bureaucracy, the SGs in the provinces, the directors general in education, and the top officials in each of those, to therefore also reciprocate the kind of commitment we are seeing at political level? We are here to present the results as they are, and we have taken all the comments seriously, and I can assure you, Madam Chair, that we are going to engage on this. Not just engage. We will present a plan, and we have a date for the plan. It's not a plan forever. There is a plan in the budget speech of our minister. This plan is going to be presented. We're not shifting it's clear what is going to happen. Now, the issues of curriculum have been dealt with by my colleagues. I believe we've got the best curriculum in the world in the same way as we have the best policies in the world. But you can't say it's the best policy and the best curriculum if you can't implement it. To implement our curriculum and our policies, it's the people who must do it. Sometimes it's not just the training of the people that I'm talking about, but it is what is inside. What is there inside? How much do you love your country? Whether you understand that what you're doing is an opportunity that many have died for in this country. To what extent have we therefore made people to understand the opportunity that is not just about our country, it's also about our continent and the role of our country in ensuring that our continent is a catalyst for true transformation for the majority of our people in the country. On behalf of my minister, I can assure you that on daily experience, I see the kind of leadership that will take us somewhere. Thank you, Chair.
Let me just take this opportunity to thank the Department of Education and Lucy for their input and presentation. But I must indicate that really the issue of education is very emotional thing. I must say from where I'm seated that we are still having a long way to go. We do have policies. But if we are not monitoring and making sure that we put that in practice, really, it won't happen. As a chairperson, my wish is that one day a child who learns in a farm school or in a public school should have that confidence that the one who studies in the formal model school doesn't mean he's better than me. Or it doesn't mean that the education that is got is better than what I got. You know, this is what we're striving for. You know, when we talk about equality, so that all of us will feel that we are equal, where we have access to education. And I just want to say at the end that I thank you, and I don't think this is the last interaction with the department and Woman Lucy. Whenever we need information, we are going to interact and conduct. And maybe I should reiterate that I personally don't feel that we have done more around the issue of basic education, the input, that we are still going to have an interaction with the department. As the members are aware that we are from provinces, we see what is happening there. We go to the farm schools, we go to farm areas, we know exactly what is happening there. So we'll need more time because we'll be talking about our experience, what we see daily on the ground. On that note, I thank everybody and the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.